Agora. Ao first agenda item is a report for the interaction with the Office of Inspecting Judge. Just to reiterate, the committee view is that the inspecting judge plays an integral role in ensuring that inmates are treated humanely and accommodated in conditions that are conducive to rehabilitation and to humane detention as per our constitution. We believe that inspecting judges' office of responsibility is a key role player in facilitating the improvement of inmates that are incarcerated. We also have this interaction because the committee in its oversight and also in correspondence that we receive from inmates are duty bound to ensure that concerns raised by inmates, one, are addressed, and secondly, are brought to the attention of the authorities. So this meeting is also to share whatever we pick up from our oversight visits and correspondence with the inmates or their legal and or relatives. And finally, this meeting is to ensure that the relationship between the inspecting judge's office and the Department of Correctional Services is such that the inspecting judge's office gets the necessary support from the inspecting judge. So that really is the purpose of this meeting that we have with the office of the inspecting judge, and it's probably the third time that they appear before us, if not the second time, quarterly. We thought it was important to introduce this type of interaction over and above our interaction that we have with the department. So we will allow the Office of the Inspecting Judge to brief us on this report that is applied to us in time, and members would have had an opportunity to go through the report. So we will allow you, sir, to take us through the report, and then all of us will engage with that, and maybe members, if they have their own input to make for your own action, they will then engage with the report, as we do normally. We have until 11:30, Philip. We have until 11:30 with this interaction, and then we meet with the rest of the players. It's 9:30, so it's 2 hours. Can we agree, sir, that 45 minutes, well, I don't know how long you are hoping for your input, but can we agree 45 minutes maximum, and then we can open it up for discussion? Is that okay? All right, I'm not sure who's leading a delegation, but Minister and Commissioner, yeah, also, I'm not sure if you want to also say something in the beginning of this meeting. We are, for minutes and 10 late, awaiting Judge Alala. He's on his way. So he will join us in due course. I think we have an apology from Mr. South. Only from Mr. South. Other members will probably join us as we go on with our business. Yes, sir. Yes, Minister.
The Commissioner, actually, after the first session.
All right, the Commissioner and the Minister would leave us after the first session, after session where we deal with the readiness for the implementation of the Correctional Matters Amendments Act, and we have colleagues from the various departments, Justice, etc. and so on. All right, I think that would be fine. Okay, the Carol, sir, the first year, sir.
Chairperson, honourable members, to the Minister, the National Commissioner, to all the officials from the department, and also members of the Judicial Inspectorate. Mr. Chair, we thought first that the introduction will be very, very brief because the report has been submitted on the 14th and we trust that the members, we will rather allow the members to interact with us and engage with the report than making long presentations. However, there's 3 points I'd like to make and this is with reference to the previous two reports that the committee has highlighted, and one was the quality of our report. I trust that we will see that we have addressed that, we have put systems in place because we do understand that this is a public document. So we have addressed the issue of the quality of our report. The second issue that was also raised from previous interactions is the relationship between the Department of Correctional Services and the Judicial Inspectorate. And here, on a previous occasion, we said that there is a remarkable change, and we expressed our appreciation, and we want to emphasize that, Mr. Chair and members, our understanding is that the Chief Operational Officer has been delegated to specifically focus on the content of our report, and since the appointment, I've said it previously, and I want to just confirm today there is a remarkable change, especially from grassroots level. Now, I'm using the word grassroots level with reference to the head of centers, to area commissioners. So we want to place on record our appreciation. There's a weekly continuous correspondence where we are not satisfied with response and with matters. I will bring it under the attention of the CEO, and we can gladly say that the promptness in which the response is highly appreciated. However, in every system there's always room for improvement. We don't want to allude that we have arrived yet, and should there be isolated cases, we will report on that. But in this report you will see that in most cases, or in all cases, there has been a response. The third matter, in conclusion, is one of the concerns of the committee, which we really took to heart, is our complaint system. And we reflected, in preparation of today's meeting, reflected on the three quarterly reports, and we can say that there is a decrease in the number of complaints coming from external sources. Example, South African Human Rights Commission, Public Protector, the Portfolio Committee in itself, the media, and so forth. And there is an increase in the number of unresolved complaints coming from independent correctional center visitors, meaning that gives us an indication, it's a slow process, that there is a trust of being built in the system. And we will continue monitor this because this is basically our baseline to indicate the trust that the inmates have in the system and also in the people that are rendering the service of dealing with the complaints and the request, monitoring the treatment and the conditions in correctional centers. So this is on a positive note. And also you will see that in terms of the complaint system, there's an increase, a general increase in terms of the mandatory matters that the head of centers must report to the inspecting judge, such as death, segregation, use of force and mechanical restraint. And then, as we speak here, the department is busy assisting us in finalizing, at last, I want to say, with a visit for head of centers to report the use of force. There's quite a number of correspondence between us, and we believe that in our next quarterly report we will be able to come back and say that wizard is in place and that the head of centers can also electronically report or use of force. In overall, Mr. Chair and honorable members, as we said that, yes, we cannot make any excuses now anymore. This is our third report. We can't continue saying, but we're still growing in this process. So we trust that the report that we bring to you is one of thorough oversight, and should gaps be identified today, we will definitely focus on that and also report it in our next quarterly report. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you very much, sir. Brief and to the point, the member can then engage with the report. I've noted Mr. Feller. I've noted Mogwenya. Let's start with you, Bob.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for the report given by the Inspector General.
report. The quality of the report, chairperson, yes, has improved, but I think there's still much to be done in terms of editing. Because it's page 10, I think it's page 10, or page 9, yeah, page 9, the second paragraph, head of spam, the fourth one, fact shortages, shave bin. I think that needs to be checked again. On the very same page, page 9,
which document are you
looking for? The one that said inspecting judge professional services.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that should be in your file. Remember for the document?
Yeah.
I think that's the document.
Okay.
Page 9?
Yeah. On page 9, chairperson, the letter was written to the department on the 24th of April, 2012. I'm talking of poll number 2. There are no DCS members trained in firefighting. The trained man. Now, what I would like to find out...
Are we
following?
Yeah, Chairperson, it's clear that there are no DCS members trained in firefighting, particularly in Papatin Street. Now, this is very serious. And what I would like to know, how long it's been in like this, and how many centers that have no trained official, particularly in this aspect. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Saying on it, there's no page 9, but after page 8 on the program 2, the report is talking about shortage of professional staff. I think the report is heavy and got a good reflection. Because even on our oversight, we have witnessed this. So I want to know, Chair, that as the report is in front of us, did this report go to the office of the commissioner? Because there's nothing that tells us that after they've been collecting all this information, did they go to the office of the commissioner, and what was the response? Because really what the report is saying is what was found also when we go to oversight. But there's no response on the side of the commissioner. So, Chair, I wanted to check that how is their relationship with the office of the commissioner? Because you remember last, there was a report that was coming from the inspecting judge. And also tried, that report was not submitted to the office of the commissioner. Then we said we cannot discuss it because one was pointing one another. So I wanted to get that clarity. How is their relationship and how are they reporting before they bring a report to us? Thank you, Chair.
All right. We take the first round of questions. I think these are controversial questions just to understand the status.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, with regards to the gangsterism in page 11. But if you go through the document, you will see here and then they make mention about it. So, and then just below page 11, and then the GCS feedback point number 3, the center's gang management strategies are in place. So, last time they said they don't know what these strategies entails. So, I still stand on my point that we must know what is it, you know, how. And the other point is, if you look at the feedback column of this report, the status, then you will frequently see that letters have been sent, receive feedback, etc., etc. But is there follow-up to find out whether those things are being corrected? Yes.
Chairperson, if you look at page 10, on the
page 10,
the top of the page, the electronic system, security system is malfunctioning. What does that mean?
I'm
asking this question, Chairperson, because if you say the electricity system is not working in the correctional centers, are you saying therefore the system is supposed to monitor these people inside or opening it and closing it on, it's just functioning? If it's not functioning, how does the people work? How do they come in? Because if you see how the letter was sent on May and even today, the follow up is the 21st of June, if you follow the sequence, it's not yet there. I don't think it's functioning now. Now, to me, that's a problem, because we're talking about the security staff that is involved. That's my gist of the question, Chairperson. Some of the things that are basically, that they're supposed to work in the correctional centers are not there functioning properly. And then if you see follow-up, it takes long for them to be fixed. What happens in the meantime?
Yes, Chairperson, I agree with Honorable Nkrumah. If you look at page 18, in part, food preparation is inadequate. Chiefs must elaborate more on that. How inadequate in terms of what? And center relationship with the DDW needs attention. And that is the challenge that we are facing always about the relationship of DCS and DPW. There will be always correspondence, one pointing finger to the other one. So it looks like there is no solution for this. So they must explain to us what did they resolve. Was there a meeting to resolve this, and what was the resolution? And also on page 18, at number 21, the center of Mount Elif is overcrowded, but there is no, what is the capacity of the center? What is the population? What is the accommodation supposed to be in Mount Elif? To extend that the center is overcrowded, we don't know overcrowded in terms of what percentage. Interesting. Thank you.
All right. I know, Mr. Carter, that you did allude to it, and maybe you alluded to it very briefly, but I think what you're hearing members is saying, the first thing that we need to talk about is, when this report gets presented to us, what is its status in terms of the DCS having had a look at it and their response to it? I think that's the first part. So you pick up a letter from somebody, and you put it into your report, you bring it to us. That's what we understand. But when you get that letter, you send it to, do you send it to DCS? Do you and DCS look at it? I see here that you are saying, DCS, send a letter to my personal email, because DCS's email is not working, that type of thing. We just want to know, from your view, when you send this thing to us, has DCS looked at it? And how do you incorporate DCS's responses to it, as opposed to just enumerating the problems? I think that's the first point that members don't understand. We'll then get into the detail of now that you've picked up that there's no firefighting training, now that you've picked up that there's no nurses, now that you've picked up that there is no electronic system working, now that you've picked up that there's gang terrorism, and raised it with the Department what is happening, or is yourself the host box? I think that would be the second part of it. But really, members have to understand the relationship, and by the time this report comes to us, how much we read the report.
Mr. Chen, members, looking at it, the question holistically, in our previous report, you are eminently correct. We wrote a one-size report because it was the first time that we report. We never gave the report to the department, so we admit that. What we did in this specific report, and I will give you a specific date, the report was submitted to the portfolio committee on the 14th of August, and the very same report was submitted to the department. And when I say to the department, it is all chief deputy commissioners, all regional commissioners, to the national commissioner as well as to ministry on the 19th of July. The judge had a meeting with the deputy commissioner who is assigned to speak under correction minister, and I'm assigned to under correction. Is assigned also to oversee the work of the office of the inspecting judge. Therefore, the judge and the deputy commissioner met. Deputy minister, thank you, commissioner. Sometimes enough. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that question. The deputy minister is assigned to overlook the office of the inspecting judge. Therefore, the inspecting judge and the deputy minister met, whereby the judge physically handed over the report to the deputy minister. Subsequently, I have been sending emails as follow-up to the chief operational officer. The chief operational officer called a meeting with all the regional commissioners, and we discussed some of the aspects in this report. Where I would like to go in conclusion, what we discovered is that we give this report to the department at the end of the quarter. Now the department has to go back in 3 months, which makes it sometimes very difficult in terms of the seriousness of matters, firstly, and also in terms of the quantity of matters that they need to attend to. We resolved that by the 15th of each month, we will send a report to the chief operational officer and to all of the regional commissioners, meaning that we made another step in terms of progress in the next quarterly report. Let me just summarize this quarterly report. We gave it at the end of the quarter. I'm giving you the date, the 19th of July, which is basically 4 weeks before the date that we submitted to portfolio committee. The next quarterly report will reflect that we give our report on a monthly basis. We did already submit the July report. We honored our commitment, and it gives the chief operational officer and the regional commissioners more sufficient time in dealing with the nitty-gritty of the content of the report. I trust that I could have answered that question, Mr. Chen and members.
Just so that we understand it, Mr. Carlson, this report was given to the department on the 19th of July, and they've done their stuff. You're saying to us that going forward you will give the department a report monthly for their working on it. So by the time it comes to us, at least 2 months' work will be done. So that members can understand the process as it unfolds. The question that I have is not the difference. The suggestion that I want to make, because we have to take your word for it now, is that your next report that you give us, the next quarterly report, is it possible for you to be able to say to us, query number 1, query number 10, appeared on last quarter's report and is still appearing on this quarter's report? Because it doesn't make sense to give us a new report every month. What we want is a age analysis, that this thing is outstanding for 6 months. But then we focus on those things. And these are new things. Because what you are saying to us now is that we are all on the same page. And I think members will have to accept that for now. But going forward, we'd want to know that, in fact, what you should be doing for us is to split up those that have appeared in the last quarter's report that are here and the new ones, so that members can decide whether they zoom in into the old or the new ones. But just to answer members' questions, this report then going forward will be a report that the department would have had an opportunity to comment on. Therefore, if it comes to us, it will either come to us saying, DCS has looked at it, we are happy that they've resolved it. DCS has looked at it, they're dragging their feet. So that's going to be the state of the report going forward. All right. So now that we have agreed on that as how we're going to deal with reports going forward, for the sake of this interaction, I'm not sure, sir, if you can then deal with the matters. The first one to remind you is the firefighting, or the state of firefighting readiness, the state of professional employees shortages, you know, this gang management strategy that we've been continuously talking about, where are we exactly and what is the status from your viewpoint? And then, of course, what do you mean when you say electronic monitoring systems are not working? Is it endangering inmates? Is it endangering officials? Is it endangering everybody? If you could respond to those questions, and then take a second round of questions. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair, in terms of the firefighting, it was since December 2011, there was in two or three occasions where inmates had set the centre alight that we investigated. And under that investigation, we discovered that in that specific instance, there weren't sufficient fire equipment, and secondly, members that are trained to deal with simple matters like that. We have then started to include it in our general routine inspection report, trying to highlight and also sensitize the department through our inspection the importance of addressing these issues. So we did not do a general survey, and we cannot today tell you how serious it is of 241 centers, how many centers adhere to this or not. The only ones that we can reflect is those centers that we have inspected. What we will take from here is to run with a survey. The intention from this is to use our independent correctional center visitors, focus on that, and bring the answer in our next quarterly report. That was our findings at that specific center. But as I said, I cannot speak in general on that matter. If whether the department has addressed that matter will reflect in the feedback from the head of the center in each specific case as reported. In terms of the shortage of staff, I think that it is a general, we've been reporting on this on an ongoing basis. And what we see on the electronic system, the number of adverts that the department is pressing to fill posts, and what was also very pleasing to see in one specific advert, that they were posts advertised as headhunt, and we really monitored that specific advert in terms of our report, and we could see that it was in rural places, and we could see it was for professional people like psychologists, nurses, educators, that gives us an indication that the department is struggling to get people, and I say especially, and we've got that advert. So from what we see and the correspondence that we receive from the department, we are convinced that they are trying to address the matter in terms of the shortage of staff. The matter of gangsterism, once again, sir, we have just in our general routine inspection picked it up, and the purpose of continuing going on inspection is to pick up what trends is there, how serious is this trend, and then to go and do research on those trends. In our forthcoming annual report, we will be addressing the whole matter of the health issue in the department. In our previous annual report, if you can recall, we addressed the matter of transfer. So as we become aware through our inspections and through other reports, we start focusing on that, and I don't want to say anything just for the sake of saying it. So we cannot give you a comprehensive answer on the matter of gangsterism, how the gangsterism management strategy plan, how effective it is. We will have to do a research on that and come back on an answer on that one. In that specific center, in terms of the, and I'm saying that specific center, where we reported on the electronic security system, we refer to two main items. The one is when there is an electric fence, and the fence is not working properly, and where there is scanners for visitors and members and whoever comes in, and that specific scanner is not working. So security in terms of what comes in the center, security in terms of, it could be an escape short when it comes to fencing, and that is the specific issue at that specific center that we are referring to. I don't know if I can answer the business there.
We'll allow members to follow up. But let me just ask a question. You refer to page 14, that's what you're talking about.
Page 14. You talked about Springbok IDC vacant, that's what. It talks that you, Isaac Kutsia, who has been awaiting trial since 2008 and never attended our court since being incarcerated. You there?
Yes.
Yeah. It also talks about the fact that he is mentally disabled, isn't it? The inmate is mentally ill and awaiting classification. You can arrive there for the 6th of August. We have come and gone. The complaint was handed over. They give us a reference number. In June, DCSRC responded, arrived for the 6th of August. We are now at the 19th of August. Is there any update on that one? There's two problems that we have with that. One, somebody that's mentally ill is a vulnerable somebody. That's the first. The second one is the whole issue on the waiting time. From 2008, we are 2012, and this person has not even appeared in court. So that is a serious problem. Are members of this?
Yes.
You are with us. Okay. So can you just give us a feedback on that? I'm raising this because Commissioner DCS will know through your representatives. I wish to address Helen Tuzman on Thursday. This matter, not Isaac, but this particular type of matter was raised sharply by civil society about the long await. That's why we've happy that we're dealing with the remand detention, but there is the thing about long awaiting trial, people not going there. So I'm just trying to get a sense. It's one thing to report to us, but what sort of feedback do you guys do on this matter? Because we go out and we tell society something differently. We don't want you to be giving a report that contradicts what we are saying. On this particular one, is there any feedback on Mr. Isaac Kutsia? Or is this young man or old man still in our prison since 2008? Never appeared before in court.
Mr. Chair, coincidentally, I did that inspection myself at Springbok, and on the very day that I discovered the shocking fact, I reported it to our office that very same day. On that very same day, we spoke, wrote letters to the on the 1st of June.
On the 1st of June.
On the 1st of June. On the 1st of June, our file will defect. We spoke telephonically and wrote letters to the investigating officer, to the magistrate, to the prosecuting officer, to the Department of Correctional Services, to the area commission, to the regional commission, and we've been following this matter up. As we said here, this inmate has been transferred to Kimberley. That is the nearest place where a psychiatric someone can see to this inmate. There is, and based on that, once again, we went to do our own little bit of investigation, and in the Northern Cape at Uppington, at our at other centers, there is a challenge because there is no psychiatric hospital in the whole of the Northern Cape. There is, and I'm putting this on the record of our research, there is one or two doctors that deals with, state doctors, that deals with psychiatric patients. So it's a general challenge, but it is absolutely unexcusable for someone to be in a center for 4 years. So right now he's in Kimberley, sir, in a follow-up interaction with the department and with the center. He is undergoing psychiatric treatment in the one matter and also the assessment. So that because the assessment that is part that is also important to go back to the court for the court to make a ruling and on the assessment that has been made. So yes, there has been significant progress in this matter.
I think Commissioner, not now, but I think we're meeting with you tomorrow. Not tomorrow, I beg your pardon, next week on your court ruling. I think what we need to have to discuss in Parliament and yourself is how do we deal with these matters. You see, if somebody is physically ill, the Professional Matter Amendment Act says we can take him out. This person is mentally ill, which to me is as bad, if not worse, because a physically ill person maybe can still think, a mentally ill person can't. I'm just saying that we might have to look at this thing all of us. if the parole, medical parole, as we've spoken about, is broad enough to deal with these type of things, because then maybe we can have leeway as a department to force justice to reconsider us sitting with people that for all intents and purposes, it's not our baby, it's something that is foisted upon us. This is an awaiting child, somebody, and yet correctional services sit with the baby on this matter. I think, Commissioner, that we must have a discussion and we must take it to the portfolio of justice or something. We must look at it because these are the type of things that people zoom in on, and DCS looks like the bad players. We zoom on you and the department and say to the department, that's why I raised initially, to say this is unacceptable. But on thinking about it now, there's not much that you guys can do about it. And I think we must have a political discussion on this matter. Yes, I guess what I'm saying is
not just the judges, not just the police, because this is a waiting time. Because the police themselves, they are at fault. Because this person has been staying there for 4 years. Why did he bring him to court? Something like that. This is why I'm not cutting you short there. I'm just jumping and saying that. And on justice, plus the police.
All right. Do you want to focus on this point? Because remember, we're agreeing that we will discuss it in depth next week, but we'll allow you, Commissioner, once members have said their say, if I have to say something, or and Minister, just on this point, how we take the process forward. Let's say you have to say something as a wrong way. Okay, just on this point. Okay, let's talk on this point, and then we'll allow Minister and Commissioner to respond.
On this point. As far as I am concerned, there is a West End in Kimberley that accommodates mentally ill. Good morning, sir. Yes. There is West End Hospital in Kimberley. From 2008, there was a facility to accommodate this inmate in the name of West End in Kimberley. Yes, the challenge is there of the hospital, the big one that is not finished yet, but there is a facility. That's the first one. Secondly, the ICCV vacancy. To my knowledge, there was a person in the name of Katrina Boyce who was doing a very good job in the Springbok facility. She was volunteering for a very long time. I don't know what she later, what she appointed or what, but this is still vacant. She was doing a very, very, very good job, and she had even progress with those awaiting trial inmates in the Springbok facility. So for me, I think we need to have thorough investigations into this, if the need may arise, Chairperson, because people are not telling the inspecting judge, inspector, the truth. So some of us would have to go and investigate on our own, unannounced, because this is not a true reflection of what is happening in the Springbok Centre.
All right. Let's ask Minister and Commissioner if you want to talk on this. And we will have an in-depth discussion later on. But it's really how do we all together, because this is a baby that is outside of our hands. But if you want to say something, Commissioner, you can raise it, and we will have an in-depth discussion next week. And then we'll come back to you. This is not on this one. No, okay. Commissioner?
Thanks, Chairman, and the members of the Portfolio Committee. Power is not to make a statement. Suffice to say, we are thankful for this introduction. The matter will be also taken in the next presentation of the colleagues who will be presenting on Correctional Matters Amendment Act that deals with the issues of mentally retarded people in our facilities. But most importantly, I think the Minister would like to say something on one of the issues with respect to ATD.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, I'm happy that this matter, Chair, we are raising it because I think it's about time that we actually meet the whole government, parliament, to be aware of what is called awaiting trial. We indicated, as we're speaking to the public, that we have got 160,000 inmates, which is higher than anybody else in Africa. It's compared only to the United States and Colombia and those other countries. The highest that you have in Africa is Nigeria with 45,000. The 45,000 that Nigeria has, 200 million people, is equal to our waiting trial prisoners. Our waiting trial prisoners are kept by us just for custodial reasons. The police have arrested the person, can't be held at the police station, then sent to us. And some of these people is 4 years, 5 years. Some say, and what in fact should we do with those people? Because we're keeping them in custody. They have not been tried. Case being arrested and investigated, don't investigate and arrest. So we keep those people. And what then do you do? In the case of this particular inmate, for instance, Isaac, Department of Health, in terms of mental illness, says there was no bed capacity. Because no beds, then you are kept. The police say no, investigating this person. Justice says they are not ready. Health says we don't have a bed for this person. Then you just keeping this person. What do you do with them? And so I think it's a matter that we must bring to the attention of the whole parliament, really, to say let's be real about this matter.
No, I think we all agree. Absolutely. Maybe we'll discuss it when we get there later on, to the second part of it, but we have to discuss the matter. If we are hammering your rehabilitation on the one hand, you're overcrowded on the other hand, you lumped with somebody on the other hand, is that you mentally ill? There's no opportunity of rehabilitation on this matter. I just think that politically we need to start having this discussion around the effectiveness of our policies vis-a-vis correctional services, and I don't think it has been there going forward. I think members will sympathize and will support it. What we need to do is to find appropriate, an appropriate platform to raise these matters. But thank you very much. I thought that was useful. We'll come back. Do you want to talk to this man? Fine.
With the permission of the judge, Mr. Carlson, my recollection of the facts of this matter, and we have the Ms. Banya Kudwin, who is the legal services manager. This is a remand detainee who appeared in a court, and the magistrate before whom this detainee appeared, Mr. Kassir, had found that he couldn't stand trial in terms of the Civil Procedure Act. In terms of the Mental Health Act, I don't have it here, but there's a procedure where, we used to call it the state prison patient, where a high court had to look at the matter to declare this person a state prison patient. Now, very briefly, the two issues here, and I want you to say this because This will have nothing to do with parole, of course, the other remand detainees. But the two issues that were picked up by Mr. Carlson on his visit and our subsequent visit was that he got lost in the system. He was in that center for 4 years, and it appears that the department has not known what to do with him. The clerk of the court, in my view also, or clerk of the criminal court who does these matters, to transfer it to the High Court. Now, so those are the two issues. One, getting lost, if I can use that inverted commas, in the center, and then, and correctly so, the Department of Justice and interaction between Magistrates Court and High Court. I thought I'd just share that.
Yeah, no, you're complicating that a bit further. No, okay, man, no, closing it. You see, sir, wait, no, I want to close. I'll allow you, sir, but before I allow you, Inspector, the reason why I'm saying that this thing opening up a can of worms, because your report, when we started, somebody spoke about the integrity of the report. And when I looked at this letter, remember I looked at it in preparation, it says this inmate has not attended trial since 2008. That's what it says. You now come and say he was there, and what makes it even worse now, and why, Minister, I really think we have to have a discussion. If the last speaker is correct, how does a magistrate say this man is not fit to stand trial and then still send him back to our facilities? It's a derelict of duty from the magistrate side. And that is why I'm saying that we need an in-depth discussion, not on ISAC, but on the principle of it. Yeah. You cannot say this man, Mina, I can't try him because I don't think he'll do something, and then defer the problem to correctional services. And that is why I thought, Baba, it's very good that you've raised it. But I think we will agree, let's have a more comprehensive discussion broadly over this thing. But let me allow you, Judge, to talk on this matter.
We're going to Kimberley with Mr. Carlson. We discussed it with the officials then. It was discussed. Prison, the old prison, old Kimberley prison, and they made it clear to us that they had plans to build a mental institution in Kimberley, and but it has not got off. Now, I'm coming to the resolution of this matter. If this man was in detention and was suspected to be insane, the magistrate should have referred to a mental hospital. Now, if there are no facilities in that area, he should have arranged that he referred to a mental institution in areas where there are institutions, because there are institutions in a number of areas in this country. There is one here in the Western Cape, there is more than one in Gauteng. There are two in KwaZulu-Natal. It could be referred there for observation and a report back to the magistrate. Because then the institution, wherever it is referred to, will then give a report after 30 days to say whether he is insane or not. And if he is insane, then of course he then referred to an institution. He doesn't even try to refer him to an institution. What you talk about declaring a person a state prisoner, that's something else. That's when a person has been tried and found guilty, but insane. Now that's a very guilty but insane. Then the judge then declares him a state president's patient, and he then referred to an institution. So this whole thing, even the way I look at it, it's not complicated. It's just that the must refer to a magistrate court, the magistrate must then refer to a mental institution. And if there's no institution in the area, he must refer to an area where there are institutions. It's not a problem.
No, thanks very much, Judge. I noted in the second round, first Kwele, then Gwenya, and then Advocate Max, in that order.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I'm still on the issue of firefighting. I heard that the Office of Inspector General regarding the issue. But I think it is very, very important that we take it very seriously. If one looks at what has just happened in Venezuela, that recently, this week, I was just making that point that it should be taken very seriously as a matter that needs serious attention. Because here in depths of two, friends got banned by inmates in Venezuela. Yeah. If you look at page 11, yes, again they will talk of this fighting equipment not being carried. But the worry that I'm having there is that the whole of the DPW, these five things are not serviced. And then a call has been logged with DPW to service them. Now the question that arises, how long does it take for DPW to service these five things? Can't we find another way of attending to the matter? Then there was another issue that I wanted to raise. It is in page 13, where we deal with meals for the inmates, where they were not provided. That is number 3, in page 13. In addressing this matter, new officials have been appointed at the center to ensure inmates are served with 3 meals a day at the center. Now, the concern that I'm having is that the department must be very careful that we don't create problems. Because this is they are going to have a new shift in that center. Whereas we're still sitting with a crisis of 78,000. I think we need to be very careful. That's enough to let the that department must take it very seriously.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on page 15. Bullet 1 on Ebusteni Youth Development Center. The report is telling us about the planning that EDSL require attention. Chairperson, I wanted to know that if there is a challenge of planning in the center, when did it been fixed, or even now is still there. My worry is the DPW, that if the public works also is not assisting, that means we will still have a challenge. But at the very same time, Chair, on this issue of DPW in terms of the plumbing in ourselves, there's a contradict statement in terms of the department, whereby the DPW will tell you that there is fund to make a maintenance if there's a problem of plumbing. And if the report of the inspecting judge is coming with that problem again that we came with on our report in terms of to fix the EOMB pipe and all that is not happening, I don't know how is the department going to answer on this. The department must explain to us ukuba kwenzakala ntoni ngale mali abanikezwa yona to fix iimpompi. Number 3. 2, Chairperson, on page 17, bullet 4, it says kitchen equipment is not in working order. Chairperson, I want explanation what what is this report saying about that? To me, is not clear. What do they mean if they are saying kitchen equipment is not in working order? What do they mean? Because, Chair, you remember that we are still waiting for the report in terms of all the kitchens in our center. So it's giving me worry, Chair. If Lakayana Ebusteni, there's a challenge, yama equipment in the kitchen. Thank you, Chairperson.
Just before Mr. Max and Palisa, so that we're on the same page. If you go back to page 15, for instance, I'm asking members maybe, as I understand your report, Mr. Carlos, you give your problem statement, whatever you want to call it. But at the bottom it says DCS feedback. For instance of that one, it says the plumbing issue identified has been repaired. Are you with me? On page 17. On top you say there's no plumbing. At the bottom DCS says has been repaired. Now, I'm first of all asking you, is that when you put it there in bold, it means that you are in agreement with it? That's what it means? And if that's what it means, I'm just asking members to, when you look at it, also look at the DCS responses, because sometimes the answers might be in the response. For instance, you're saying on top, plumbing needs to be done. But at the bottom they say, but you know, that plumbing has already been fixed up. So I just want to check with you first, is my understanding correct, so that members don't ask questions that already have been answered in the document. Is that the correct understanding?
The process is that we send the findings back to the data center, or someone from the department will say the problem has been resolved, but then we must still verify it, meaning that we must send that complaint back to the independent center visitor to go and monitor. Otherwise, we will just take the department's word. Not that we say that it's not due, but there must be a verification process and a monitoring process. So at this stage, when we report, yes, we accept their word, but we have not necessarily checked it, and if it is not checked, in line what we discussed this morning, we will come back to say, it was a finding, this is what it said, but when we verified it, it was not a matter. Or if we don't come back, then it means we are satisfied.
No, that's why the Mamgwenya is in order. Because the point as it stands, it still exists because you can't confirm whether it's been done or not. I just want to get clarity on that one. All right. So we'll come back to respond to that one when we get there. Can we then ask for Advocate Max and followed by Mam Balisa? And then Munir Abraham, and then we will allow you to respond. Oh, you want to have a second bite there? So just hold on. It's Max, it's Baliso, Max Baliso, it's Abraham, and then Munir Max.
Thank you, Chief. Just for completeness, I just want to make a proposal with regard to this report. Because, as you can see, you get confused. At one place, it's been addressed, and the other place is still outstanding. Is that I would like to propose that on your last column, where you say status, where the, you mentioned that DCS response, where you should put there my proposal. DCS response, on this item, and action taken. And it split it up, action taken. Then you don't have to go to all the papers again to check. Then you know exactly outstanding. Or training has been supplied, that comes there of outstanding, no response yet, or action taken by the department. So on the face of your document, for me as a layperson who doesn't know this, in between, can see action was taken, they rectify it, and they have outstanding issues, and then you bring forward those issues to the department for your completeness of your report. This is the one. See, the other thing is, if you look at this report, and I said it before, then you will see that besides the duties of the inspectorate in terms of the act, to see whether there's compliance with your constitutional obligations of the department, and whether they have been treated humanely and so on, then you pick up here is shortcomings which is actually managerial shortcomings, like kitchens, tiles, water, plumbing, you know, all the things which is not there. Now my question is, you know, where I come from in my previous life, I served in various positions and also part of the provincial inspectorate in police. So, at station level, when the sergeant comes to duty, he must inspect or see, must make out the entry, what is old flag, how it is hoisted and lowered or whatever the case may be. The warrant officer, the chief warrant officer come and check the books. When I come as an officer, I check the shelves and check whether there's court references and things is in place. Where are their shortcomings? Then what is in this occurrence book must be reported to the logistic people. When it has been rectified and cross reference, it has been addressed. So, my question to this department is, you know, I like to look at the commissioner, but he sits under the pillar. So, yeah, is, you know, what is the system? The two questions. One for Jeff. When you pick up these things, was the commander of the center aware of these shortcomings? And what did they do about it? Why was it necessary for Jeff to come and tell them, listen, where you work on a daily basis, this is wrong. You see it. This is wrong. And if they were aware, what did they do about it? No. Why are we sitting here with a report which should have been things which should have been made and fixed by ordinary basic managerial strategies and management staff? Thanks.
What? The second, no, we still have other questions. I just want to say to Commissioner, the second part about what DCS is doing about it is what we will discuss tomorrow, next week. I keep on saying tomorrow. So can we limit our questions to Judge Shabalala and his team? Those that arise from here that must be for the department, we'll have a second bite of the cherry tomorrow for the department, because otherwise we are going to be dividing these two institutions. One will be putting a finger at the other one. Don't think that's our intention here.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is that we really need to, whether it is on our next engagement, we need to engage on the independence of the inspecting judge office, the independency of his office. Why I'm saying this, Chairperson, if you look at page 11, bullet 4, there is one clinical doctor for the area, the need for nurses and social workers was registered, but due to a lack of funds, all vacant posts were abolished by head office. My question now comes, throughout this report, from the Siki, the Bavians, the Port M20 Youth Center to Springbok, to Umtata, to webinar. Throughout this report, you've got ICCV vacant, ICCV vacant. Now my question comes, how long is this vacancy there? Is there funds for the vacancy because this office has no independent budget? They are dependent, they are dependent on the budget of DCS. So how effective are we really getting service from this office because of an independency that is not really independent? If you understand what I'm saying, Mr. Carlos. And if I look at, I want to come to Fulberg Medium. Medium B, page 29. The G365 register. Really, we need to an explanation. Are there really matter resolved of inmates in terms of the complaints that were registered at this register 365? Because then I read through this. It seems to me it is just a register for sake of the database. I can't see where matters are really resolved because here I read that there is no evidence. There is no evidence, and most of the time when we are on oversight, people are complaining that we don't even want to go to that registration book because these matters are not resolved anyway. So they have lost confidence in the office of the inspecting judge because their matters are not resolved. Not that we say that we believe what they are saying, but we must have two sides of the story to resolve it so that we can also come to the bottom of this and resolve them. And because there is also a report that shows that there was a lie of an image that said that was sexually assault. So that one was resolved very, very quick, and the investigation was thorough, and there was a matter resolved. At least one can have some examples of such matters, if only we can get an answer that, really, do you solve this matter? Because it's the very same matter, although at the Mangaung Mangaung Center at page 37. It's the very same matter that I picked up in the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Abraham.
Baie, baie dankie, voorzitter. Voorzitter, wat sê 16? Page 16. If one looks at the report on it's also item 16, M. Tangeni, juvenile center. The number 5, children are not housed separately from juveniles. What I would like to know, Chairperson, is does this actually mean that children they say that they are housed together in the report, and therefore what is important to find out is that during our recent oversight visit to Edwangeni, we were informed that there were only 240 youth incarcerated at this facility. It has a space for 640 offenders. That means that there is no overcrowding, and therefore there should be room for the separation of juveniles from, children from juveniles. What we would like to know from the Office of the Inspecting Judge is whether they mean that children are not separated from juveniles, and is it in the form of, or in terms of accommodation, or is it in terms of activities at the center? Because you could separate them in the evening or whenever they have to be locked in, and you could allow them to be together with other extramural activities. So which of these are you referring to? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Taylor?
No, thanks, Sebastian. I just want to find out on this one. This is page 24. Page 24. It is that inmate alleged that you have raped and or assaulted and required the sum of 300 as protection man. I just want to know who wanted this man from this inmate. Then on page 31, the layman, I need some understanding here. This is issue number 11, matter number 11. It says that as the offender queried, the inmate went to court on 31st May 2012 and never returned to the center. Then it goes on and say, Mrs. Zibane stated that there is not follow up on the inmate if the inmate doesn't return from the court. Well, I think that this one is going to be addressed by the department not today. But what I wanted to find out on this one, can you clarify to us what does this actually mean? Thanks.
The Carlos, are you going to say something? Are you okay? So who is the Carlos?
Let's look at pitch 19, Jefferson. I left a lot of cash in paper to complain about inadequate food at local employees. And then you talk about children and staff. You talk about rival contractors to deliver perishable foods. You talk about urgent structural maintenance needed for the kitchen. You talk about IT and so on. In all two departments, DPW and yourselves. But it doesn't say anything on the other side. It doesn't say anything. It doesn't say what has happened. I'm getting lost somewhere, somehow. If you can excuse me, what does it mean? What does it mean? We find these things. It's the same thing that goes back to what the advocate has asked. You find these things, but it seems as if there is no action taken and so on. And somebody behind me, one of the old members, said maybe we are going to get a report about the kitchen and so on. But it seems like there is an impact on these things. you follow me, Jefferson. That's why I have the problem of management, somewhere, somehow, because it doesn't say anything that the action has been taken or what. What has happened to it? Where are we? Thanks, Jefferson.
Thank you very much, Obanzovu. Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chen, members, can I just start with the last one? I'm going to deal with four things in general matters. And then the specifics, the directors, the team members that came with, that deals with the specific matters, will respond on that. The chairperson already sensitized that it is important that in terms of the inspections and investigations that there is a feedback from the department. And going to the Mount Fletcher, number 22, page 18, page 19, it actually goes over. We will see that the department did respond to that. So there is some action indicated, and we also take a note, a advocate, Max, that we will incorporate your thoughts in our next report.
I will take
it. Thank you. Mr. Dean and members, we had submitted on the 14th, and on the weekend of the 10th and the 11th, we basically finalized our report. On the 13th, our report went to the editor in order to submit on the 14th. But on the 13th, we received two reports from two regions, the L&M region and the Eastern Cape region. And we could not include that feedback in our report. I trust you can understand that. But however we did, forward it to the portfolio committee. And we did indicate to that two regional managers, unfortunately, otherwise we would have come back here with a lot of grammar and a weak report. And we needed to edit on the day that we received the report, so that was late. So there are some feedback that is not in our report, but we did receive it, and the reason why I'm mentioning that this is because that matter of the firefighting at Barberton, that's one of the matters that the regional commissioner did address in his feedback report, but it's not unfortunate in our report. Secondly, when we do a routine, what we call a routine inspection, we send a pre-inspection report to the head of the center. The head of the center then completes a pre-inspection report, and at the end of the inspection, we then basically go and verify what the head of the center says. So the head of the center, or his designee, is at all, we never ever do an inspection on our own without a member accompanying us for security reasons, but also for verification in our findings. So during the inspection, we will engage and say, this is what we see, this is what we observe. So there and then, the head of the center always typically is aware of our finding. Then we send that back. So what we report in is what we see in terms of the general conditions. I trust I could answer that one. Then in terms of page 11, the finance, what we say there is, the response of the head of the center. It has nothing to do with the budget of the judicial inspector for correctional services. The head of the center alludes that the need for nurses and social workers was registered, but due to a lack of funds, all vacant posts was abolished by the head office. That is the Department of Correctional Services head office, not our head office, it's their workers. Now, one of the gaps that we also identified when myself met with the Chief Operational Officer and the Regional Commissioner is the head of interest will write anything to us, and it is not necessarily being verified by the Regional Commissioner. And therefore, we went to that quarterly system, a monthly system. So when they do report to us, we will send it back to the Regional Commissioner and say, is this a fact? So that we don't come here with what your center says, but it's not been verified by management of the department. So it doesn't impact our budget at all, man. And then the last one is regarding the GC65
The vacancies will give to the department. The department that deals with the filling of...
Oh, okay. The RCTV vacancies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let me just address the RCTV vacancies. Okay. Just yesterday we had a discussion with the Department of Public Service and Administration regarding the remuneration of RCTVs. Because we don't have a paper trace when last that was reviewed. And I just want to give you the facts. RCTVs, in terms of the Act, appointed by the Director of CEO. It is contract work. It's a 3-year contract. Meaning that at the end of the contract, that further service is no more needed. However, in many instances, and if you can recall Mr. Kekana being here on the previous occasion, they may avail themselves and go through the whole process, and if it's successful, they can be appointed. So, if a person has been for 2 contract periods there for 6 years, and for whatever reason the person says, I'm at the end of my contract, I don't want to, or I can't either work there anymore, then there's nothing that we can do. Then we go through a process of calling for nomination, and interviews and training, and appoint someone. At our strategic planning, we identified that the period between the vacancy of the post and filling the post, that is a major challenge. What we then did, the inspecting judge then authorized us to go back to former ICCVs and offer them a 6-month contract, giving us space to recruit someone, train someone, and appoint someone, because it's a process. When a contract comes to an end, we can determine that. We know that contract is coming at the end of October. So we start planning in February. So by the time that the one person goes out, the other person comes in. That is easy to manage. The risk that we should manage is 3 things. When an RCTV dies, when an RCTV's contract is terminated, or when an RCTV resigns. And they design minute notice. Those 3 instances, that is where we do make use of former ICCVs for a short period. In the urban areas, it works for success. Once again, in our rural areas, we don't have a large pool, a reserve pool of former ICCVs, and we do battle there. And therefore, we do 2 things. We give you an honest list to say, this is where we don't have ICCVs, and each quarter, as you requested on the previous time, how do you got the update list? Yeah, send you a list of all our RCTV. So that is a very, very high priority, ongoing priority in filling those vacancies. But those 3 cases, man, Chairperson, honorable member, apologize. Those 3 cases, the risk is very high, but we have good mechanisms in place to address it. Then the last one that I have in general is the G365 matter. When we do inspections, once again, it's an overall function. The week before last, I visited 4 centers in the Northern Cape. Once again, I do this once a quarter for 3 days. I go out to stay in touch of what is happening there. What I will then do, I will take the G365 register myself. I will at random say, these people that complain, can I please consult these people and ask them face to face, was your complaint or your request being addressed adequately? I also sit with the head of center and with the independent correctional center in the manner in which they are resolving. So my personal finding, and I'm not referring out to the RCTV or to inspectors, that our G365 is a reliable document, official document of the department, that those complaints recorded in there, in most cases, are adequately addressed, and it gives us an indication of the opportunity that inmates receive to register their complaints and their requests. So there is a monitoring and an evaluation function in the inspection bill specifically pertaining to the GA65 complaints and requests register. I've dealt with the general matters. The specifics, I will request the team to see the items just at that moment. The justice one could add or say something on the ICTV vacancy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the ICTV issue, I want to mention that this unit that is inspected is a young unit started in the late 90s. Now, and it has to place in Cape Town only. And because of that, the penetration into the country was not sufficient. It's only now, you know, Mr. Carlos and myself, we've been taking samples all over. We have now an office in Pretoria, an office in Durban, office in Bloemfontein. Yesterday, I received a pile of correspondence addressed to me. When I opened this correspondence, I then noticed that, no, is this ICD? From Natal, people applying to the ICCD. And then I called our coordinator, he was there in the office yesterday. I said, look, these are the things now. Why did they come to me? He said, no, it was a mistake. They should have come to him or sent directly to Cape Town. So I said, well, you take them to Cape Town because apparently they are monitored in Cape Town. So he then took them to the somebody here in Cape Town is responsible for that. What I'm trying to say is that the question of independence, which is raised by the lady there, we couldn't function properly without proper of filling all the vacancies. In fact, we do have vacancies, ICV vacancies. They are not all filled. But we're filling them now. And the coordinator for Natal told me yesterday that by end of September, all the correctional centers in KwaZulu-Natal will have ICCs, all. So you say we're busy increasing the number of ICCs. And we've been reporting, I think Mr. Carlos said before I came, has been reporting that there are vacancies which are not filled. Now, we're doing this in all the places, even in Pretoria, the same thing is happening in Bloemfontein, the same thing is happening. So, I think we must be given a chance to fulfill our obligation. We are trying. And, as I say, even yesterday when we were holding interviews for a director, one person said that after seeing our report, he's now happy to apply again because he realizes that this independent inspector is not just a Cape Town thing. It's a national thing. And when we ask for funds from the DCS, it's true that we're dependent on them. They don't refuse us our request. Though, of course, strictly speaking, we are similar to a Section 9 organization. We are supposed to be independent. But at the present moment, we are not. That is something else now. It's another topic we should discuss, whether we should be. Because we are doing an oversight function.
Yes.
And therefore we shouldn't be dependent on the department. We should be having our own funding and deal with all our matters. There are many instances which would indicate that probably that is required. Because when I was about to ask, I was told that I would have a car, and I'd have that. And then when I was got employed and these demands were met, then the department said, no, you people must have a policy. What policy? So the children are looking at the policy. So now, what is the policy? Now what is that? So you must bear with us. We are trying to comply with the Constitution and the Act. And very shortly, you will notice in our report that all the reports which are made, the RCVs who have acted. I thought I should make that point, Mr. Chairman, because it seems people are getting confused. We are dependent or not dependent, but we should be independent.
Thank you. That deals with those questions. Prime Minister, we'll have to discuss it too. What does real independence mean? All right, we want to wrap up. I'll allow you. Can I have, and then we will go on. So what is your question? On the ICTV. All right, continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think that the inspecting judge is right. But at the very same time, the department must take serious what the judge is saying. As Member Pariso has asking the independent freedom in terms of their work. Chair, if the department doesn't take serious what the inspecting judge is saying, we are going to counter problem that we're counting on the previous inspecting judge. You remember that there was a challenge of payment salary for sometimes 3 months the inspecting judge that was not getting salary. So that's why I said this is very important that the department must look at it in the the inspecting judge is struggling to get his salary because he's not having that independent that he was supposed to get. And on the first day when he was introduced to us, all what he said was in the document, that he's going to get car, going to get office, so happy that everything is on place on the document. So I'm saying, Chair, this must not be on the document, but practical is not happening. Things must happen as it was added on the document. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, I'm not going to allow that one to continue. What I'm saying, and I think you guys are correct, members, it's another matter, Commissioner, that I think we must discuss. In our quarterly report next week, I mean, it's something that must start. You see, because it's not the responsibility just of the department. It's in the Act. We must change it. It's not the department that must change it. So the finger should be pointed there. If we think that this is the case, we must argue for the motivation to make it truly independent. But again, we'd want the wisdom of yourselves. So we will have a brief discussion on it next week. But members, I really think members must be able to say, this is what we are agitating for these reasons. So, Inspector Judge, in short then, what we are saying is we'll take what you've given us and we will take it to the correct forum, which I think starts with the department next week. And then beyond that, members of parliament must review the act if we think strongly that that's the case. I just thought I would say that, and we'll have a discussion on that one next week. Just in wrapping up, and I was hoping that my colleagues raised this one. I want to refer to the to page 46, unnatural deaths in our facilities, in your report. It's a matter that this committee has constantly been harping. And there are 2 points that I want to make around this matter, because Baba Zoba, I don't think we can forever complain. We have to say what are the solutions, like we've said before. But the first point that I want to raise, Judge Chabala, I'm looking at page 47 of this report. I think it's table 9. Table 11. That's an unnatural death. Are we together? The first glaring observation that I have that is worrisome. If you go to point number 3, Aldo Schaefer died. He fell in the shower, which is the first red light for me. People falling in the shower. But the point is, death cannot be classified because there's no post-mortem. We're talking here about somebody that died in April. Post-mortem outstanding. You turn the page. Point number 7, we talk about Mr. Mbambo. DCS to be further reminded to obtain a post-mortem. We are now in August. This thing happened out of May. No post-mortem. Point number 8, we're talking about Andrew Owen. He set his mattress on fire while he was in a special care unit. No post-mortem. And these are all unnatural deaths that we're talking about. So the first point, Judge, that we want to raise with you, any unnatural death can't have a situation where the post-mortem is outstanding for 4 months. We just cannot have that situation. So I think that's the first observation I want to make around unnatural deaths. And we're concerned about it. But the point that I wanted to raise also, Minister, you know, when I look at these unnatural deaths, people committed suicide themselves. People hung themselves in the toilet. All these unnatural deaths have happened where there is the most number of population. There's maybe one or two that was in a single cell, if you read here. Even the one that is in not an ICU, in some hospital unit. It's not that it's by itself. So, when somebody commits suicide in a communal cell where we are arguing there's overcrowding, it does not make sense to the committee. That's the first point we want to make, Minister. The second point that we want to make, reading these things, is these people have committed suicide or died unnaturally after hours, and the nurse couldn't get there on time because of lockup. It's a matter that we've raised consistently, that after department officials leave, we have a serious problem in terms of management. Whether it's accessibility to the place because it's locked down. Mgwenya will always talk about the master key. And the final point that I want to make is that this department or this committee has agitated for CCTV TVs. You can't have somebody committing suicide in a communal cell. And it says by the time the nurse got there, it was too late. Surely if we had technology, we would see there's somebody getting an epileptic fit there and deal with this matter. So I'm raising those things, because when we argue for these things, we argue because experience has taught us that some of these things are not working in our favor. We want CCTVs because we think it can help. We want it because we think after lockdown, total management stops, not because you are unable to manage, but just because we're moving away, type of thing. And we also are beginning to ask the question, Commissioner, and sometimes we have to answer. That I'm saying we've lamented about, but nobody's found solution other than the cameras that we're talking about. But you can't have somebody hanging himself in a communal cell that's overcrowded. And none of us are doing anything about it. Unless those inmates are saying it's fine, let him hang himself. And we don't do anything about it. I just think, Minister, as a way of introduction, these are the things that have concerned us greatly, greatly, greatly. Unnatural deaths in this quarter, I haven't read it, but it's almost 8. If we use this trajectory, we're talking about probably 40 unnatural deaths by the time the year is over, if we just use 8 or 10 to be average of unnatural deaths. There was a crisis in Northwest when 40 people were shot. There must also be a crisis here, Commissioner. There must be a crisis here, Minister, when 40 people die in our facilities as well. Because I think we've stopped being conscious that these are human beings. I think we've stopped being. If he dies in a prison cell, it's all right. If he dies somewhere in the mine, then it's a different story. I just think, inspecting judge, I just think, Minister, I just think, Commissioner, 40 deaths in our facilities by unnatural means is something that we have to take seriously. All of us have a challenge around this matter. And part of the solution, we think, is the use of technology. Somebody must tell us why technology is not being used in our facilities. We've argued this thing. Yesterday, I think we've taken a decision that we're going to go ahead with this with or without some sort of wisdom from your side, because we think that it has to go ahead. And this just highlights the fact that we need to use technology going forward, because it is not helping us when 40 people die. I thought I must raise those points. To highlight the unnatural deaths and not to say to us what you think the solutions are, we think it's only going halfway. What we would need to discuss is how do we overcome the unnatural deaths. Somebody dies naturally, I think we almost accept. But somebody dies unnaturally. I think we need to start asking the hard questions. So, Mamgwenya, what I'm proposing is that when we look at the independence of the inspecting judge and all those things, we have to move away from just being guessing reports. We need to start saying this is the solution to some of those problems that you bring to the inspecting judge. And we're asking you guys to come to the party and help us in that regard. We're certainly going to look at technology. We're going to look at reviewing your independence or otherwise, and we're going to look at those things. So, I think that's also a matter, Commissioner and Minister, that at some point, let's put our heads together and see if we can do things differently and learn from the lessons of the expecting charges of the nations. 40 deaths are naturally 40 too many, in my view. You want to say something? We're going to wrap up. I don't know. I'll ask. No, that's what I'm saying. I'm going to allow you, Mangwene. I'm going to allow you, Advocate Max, and then we're going to hand it over to this side. And you'll close up this matter so that we move to the next matter. Mamgwenya, Advocate Max, and then Judge, and then the Department and the Ministry. In that form. Mam.
Thank you, Chairperson, there was a question that was asked on page 24, and I believe that this question, Chair, is very, very important. On page 24, in terms of Paul's Mosque Medium B, the question was asked by Baba Kwele in terms of the 300 rand as a protection money. I'm worried, Chair, because even yesterday on the design, there was an article that was in the paper to say in Gauteng there's a center whereby the inmate they buy food for protection. So, and the report of the inspecting judge also come with the 300 rand as a protection money. What is that, Chair? Who's getting this money? Thank you.
Absolutely, Mama. Please, somebody can respond to that. Advocate?
Chair, just my concern with how we deal with this report on what you have said earlier on. And that is, I have a certain concern about the department's responsibility, and that we're going to talk to them next week. Yeah. So I just want to know, will this be present there or not? Because the reason why I'm asking this, we had a situation where just in the past brought up the report. Then it infuriates the department and said it was what was mentioned there is not a reflection, whatever the case may be. Similar to the Internal Audit Committee. So I believe, in my view, is once we deal with this, I mean, this was ample time provided to the department as well, so the department knew what is going to be discussed. And to have a proper understanding and to deal properly with this, the department should be in a position also as a state platform and in the presence of those who table this report to reply to this. Otherwise, we sit with a one-sided thing
next week, just for one or other reason, is not here because they are not scheduled, and those who actually compile the report, and if the partner comes with 110 reasons, then we have to call again. So my proposal is, once we deal with this, then we have to make sure that when we deal with this, that both parties participate in this, because I want to hear the version. Or is the department going to give us also a report to say what is according page paragraph, so this has been done, so that we can have a complete picture of the status of this report. Thanks.
Proposal accepted. We will to Cindy ask at least one representative to defend the report. It doesn't have to be as in-depth as it is now. I don't think there's a problem from the department side. But next week we will invite somebody, Mr. Carlos, for yourself, or you can delegate somebody when we interrogate this report. Do you want to say something, Mapalis?
Sure,
then we'll hand over. Mapalis?
According to my understanding, Chairperson, this report was no more a one-sided report. It was a report that was communicated to DCF, and that's why I earlier asked the question of how do they resolve and what was the resolution that comes out of what you have resolved. I think I have asked about an ICCV, and I think I have asked about G365. How did you resolve and what was the resolution? And the response was, it's not a one-sided report anymore. It's now a report that was communicated to DCS. That was my understanding.
No, that's fine. We will deal with it as such, but I don't think there's any harm, Mr. Carlos, if you're there to clarify next week. We will certainly invite one of you there. Please, if somebody can, in your closing, also respond to this phenomenon of protection fees or buying food. Commissioner, you were not there, but we received a report that people, inmates have to buy inside there. So let's start this side. Just inviting up, because you're not going to speak again generally in terms of what you've heard. We'll allow Commissioner and Minister, you'll wrap up everything for us in that order. Judge.
Thank you, Chair. Now, the question of death, as you have alluded to, I'm personally concerned about it, because normally when a person dies and has not been sick, the rule is that they must be hospital conducted. That is the rule. Now, I don't know whether in terms of the DCS that rule doesn't apply, but it should apply. So, as I say, I'm new, but when I read this report, I get really surprised, because the cause of death should be noted. And if there is a query, there is an inquest. And then a magistrate sits to determine whether anybody was at fault, resulting in the death of that particular individual. That is the law general. So if it doesn't apply to this else, then there's something else. Now, the question of this report and so on, and this afternoon we're attending a workshop of an NGO which is called which is an international organization dealing with rapes in correctional centers. Now, they came to see me on Monday, and Mr. Gallas this Monday. Now, one issue which we discussed was the very thing you are raising about the CCTV cameras. They said, because if there could be CCTV cameras installed in correctional centers, then that could be identified who is doing what. Because these intercourse is abused there, and that and HIV and all these things, end of the night. So that could, I'm not sure whether constitutionally it would pass, you know, the constitutional master to have those things. whether it's been infringement, or personal rights. You know, that's another issue. So how do you look at the it's something which must be considered. We're having a meeting today and we're going to discuss that also. So can I mention this of the person? And I want to also to assure the chairman, this report, you see it here, I've been having meetings also with my team here. I'm not also happy with the report. And the reporting. And I've compared, I don't know whether you've seen the report by the this organization called it appears in the report here.
Unacceptable
for people to be paying for food and paying for things that they're not supposed to be paying for when they're in our facilities. So when we come back next week, we will reflect on our preliminary report, because it's not an investigation that can take a week, but I think by next week one will be having some preliminary information that we can share with the community, but it's a matter that we take very seriously. And also just to say that, yes, we acknowledge the issues that are raised, and we're also addressing some of the issues with our head of centers, because we agree that it's not acceptable for a head of center to be told by the inspecting judge's office that there's an issue of plumbing. It's something that the head of center should be seeing on a daily basis, and from the management side, we are trying to address those matters and hold people responsible and accountable. But we will be responding to the matters raised when it is our opportunity to respond to the report of the Office of the Inspecting Judge. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the for a very constructive meeting. Very helpful. I must register that I'm equally very perturbed about the deaths, the unnatural deaths in correctional facilities. We take our orders from the courts, and the courts in South Africa can no longer sentence somebody to death. And therefore, it means that whoever is sentenced, no matter how long is the sentence, the assumption by society in South Africa is that at whatever time, whether it's 8 years or whatever time, that person will end up back in the community. There is no one who is supposed to die there because there is no death sentence. So when you say it's life and so forth, you say, well, after 30 years in the past, after 25 years, now something must happen unless whatever, but no one is supposed to die there. And then I think we do need a very urgent investigation. The thing of slippery soaps and slippery showers and so forth, I mean, the thing used to be dead in the past. But suicide is a very private matter. You actually choose the sport those who do. And it's about the only crime where you are actually punished if you fail to carry it out. To attempt so that and fail, then you can then be punished. It's a crime that you must carry out successfully. And there isn't a way, and that's why a person chooses a private place where nobody else would see, and so forth. You can't be in a company of so many people here and say you're committing suicide. That is, in the face of it, it's just murder, and they should be investigated as such. And I agree totally with the Judge Shabalala. Whenever there is an unnatural death, there is an inquest. There is a post-mortem, there is an inquest, there are all those things. So it can't, there is no separate island that is correctional facilities. So I think on that matter, we can assure you that it's something that we are going to get into, even if we are able to just see 3, 4, 5 cases and see what happened here, and it will start giving us an idea. Because if a person is offended and can no longer be judicially executed, nobody then has got the right to execute, not the inmate, not an official. So we should look at that. I'm here also on this ICCTV, I'm just learning about it. But I think it's going to increase our capacity, because this trilogy of the victim, the offender, and the community, it must be strengthened by all means. People must talk. We can't have this thing that is called national reconciliation. The nation reconciling with another national group or whatever it is, without extending that and be proud of that national reconciliation, but actually do nothing about person-to-person reconciliation. The offender must realize that they've done something wrong. Whether they realize it in the first 2 weeks or in the first 10 years, sooner or later they must realize. That is what defines the thing that we call correction as different from just imprisonment. So the person is then realized after 10 years or after 7 years or whatever it takes them to come to realize that I did something wrong. They must connect with the victim in a safe, secure environment, which would be in a correctional facility, to say, look, I did this thing. I'm sorry. I broke into your house. I smashed your furniture and so forth and so forth. And all I needed was to take something that I wanted to buy in order to buy trucks or whatever it was. But I also smashed and so forth. People want that closure in their own lives. And there are many people who are walking wounded because you don't know what happened. And you just want to see this person who did the terrible thing. It takes time. So someone wants to see them immediately. Someone is ready to see them quite later. And that victim and offender dialogue must take place. It's towards correcting the people. It doesn't mean that once the victim and the offender have reconciled, it means automatically then you qualify to be released. No. But you are normalizing the emotional and psychological impact of the offense. And that's what we do. So I think all of us, particularly this ICCTV and everything, all of us must work together on that and actually move into society in a very big way so that society must move away from this thing that a person is taken away from society. Sometimes it's interesting to say that. There's no taking away from society. The person is part of society. Look up is part of society. You can take away. And in any case, even if you take away sooner or later, the person is going to come back. Now, once you put in your head that you're taking away somebody from society, you therefore are not preparing for the return of that person. And the person is going to return sooner or later, according to what the court prescribed. Once the people have fulfilled that, there is no other way. But I think this dialogue must actually be accelerated by ourselves, because I think there are quite a number of things that I myself are learning learning as you are running into the thing. On the matter of the CCTV, that's why I was asking that after this further session with the commission, of course, one would want to hear what are the issues about it. For me, you can't have a technology and then you ignore to use it and pretend it's not there. It does have implications for privacy. But if you weigh privacy and the human life, what is more? Even just a person stepping another right there inside, or a person actually then having feet, the natural. If someone was watching that thing in the control room, will immediately come in and rescue that person. So you look at the constitutional right to privacy, whatever however defined, versus the actual loss of human life, or officials being stabbed to death, and all those sort of things. So that I think it's something that we must really table here and see what are they thinking about it, because there's a report that is there, and we should examine that thing and weigh it with our own wisdom, that in the balance, which is more. And for me, personally, what is more is to actually be able to see and monitor what is going on there. Privacy, yes, it's fine, but it can't overweigh the human life itself. But thank you very much for the constructive here.
To the Commissioner, Mr. Inspector Judge, thank you very much. I think we need to move in the right direction, away from just lamenting, that we identify, we argue about what the appropriate solution is, and move in that direction. So thank you very much. We will interact with you again in the next quarter. Cindy will give you that. to the members, thank you very much. Maybe we should allow for a 2-minute, 5-minute break, and then we will come back and deal with the implementation or readiness thereof of the Correctional Matters Amendment Act. And the Minister and Commissioner have asked for leave, which we have granted to them, so they will not join us for the second part of it. For the rest of us, in 5 minutes, we'll come back. Thank you very much. And these services able to do what they're supposed to do, because all of them are detained. Some people can't be held for more than 7 days, some people can't be held for more than 2 hours. In some cases, judges must be able to release people if they are terminally, all those things. So we really want to find out, where are we? Just indicate, and I'm sure you'll be aware of it, Minister, COO, that this matter is very topical in civil society. Last week I went to address together with your colleagues some of these matters. But this justice, something or the other, running with it, everybody's running with it. Vuka Shabalala now is also talking about certain things that he doesn't understand. So it's really topical, and we need to make sure that we are correct. That's really the intention. So Fraser, bring us up to speed, and where there are bottlenecks, if we are then able to unblock the bottlenecks as Parliament, we want to be made aware of that so that we can do that. But what is not acceptable is for the law not to be operational, to have a law there that is not implemented. So that is really what it is. We'll allow you then, maybe start with you, DCS, and then move to Sapsia. You introduce yourself, and then move to Justice. I'm not sure if the NKA is here. So maybe we should start by you introducing your work. We'll all introduce ourselves so that we know who's here. But in order of presentation, we will do, as we are seated here, I mean, there's no particular order, starting with DCS. My name is Vincent Smith, and I chair the committee.
I'm Anthony Bowen, I'm the committee
executive.
My name is Rabin Lowen, I'm the committee.
My name is Leonard Max.
My name is Miriam Kalisto, member of the committee.
My name is Winnie Ngonya, member of the portfolio committee.
My name is Boma Tawatse, researcher for the committee.
Salam Adnan, member of the committee.
Kudili Robertson, Legal Aid South Africa.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Wonga Mtonini, committee assistant.
Major General Charles Johnson, I represent the Detective Service of the South African Police Service.
Good morning, I'm Major General Susan Pina from the Visible Policing Division of Police Service.
Good morning, I'm Patricia Makroti from National Police Service.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Escape Peter Roth from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, and I'm also the Chair of the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster Development Committee. In terms of that, we have prepared the joint presentation that you have before you, and we will be dealing with that substantively as an integrated presentation. But we will request that various departments that are represented here, that Justice, Legal Aid, as well as the NPA, address specific questions that there might be. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning. My name is Britta Rothman. I'm the head of the Rwanda Detention Correctional Service.
Good morning, my name is Mbikele Rojoli, and I'm the CEO of Correctional Services.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Tigo Mbambo. I'm the Deputy Commissioner responsible for intergovernmental relations within DCS. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Terence Radaroka. I'm Deputy Commissioner Executive Management.
Good morning, members. I'm Bionia Krobo. I'm a representative from the Inspecting Judge's Office.
Good morning. My name is Wim Lomondlovu. I'm a director for Remand Policy Analysis in the Remand Detention Branch. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Vanessa Kriyati from NICRO.
Hi, good morning. My name is Welcome. I'm from Sonke Gender Classes, an intern there working under the department for the Division Policy Advocacy and Research Unit. Thank you.
I'm Dipinder Bach from PMG.
And then Baba
And our apologies, Mr. Makagula has called away for some other matter, and Ms. Rousseau, who is also unavailable, and also Ms. Nguni. So those are the three other members of Parliament that aren't here. But for the rest of us, we are ready. Who are you, sir? Yes, sir. Who are you? Can you introduce yourself?
I'm Colin.
Oh.
Oh, I'm Colin Tremo. I'm from Soviet Gender Justice with Just Detention. Detention.
All are welcome. Let's start with the meeting. We had agreed that this meeting will be out at 1 o'clock. It's 11:45. Can we agree that about 10:45? Because some of us have some appointments. 10:45. It's really just a briefing and questions if there are any questions. I'm not sure, Mary, you're leading it or if you want to kick-start the process.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson. As it was indicated, is a joint presentation, and according to the plan, Advocate Durant will start and deal with cluster issues, which is the first part of the presentation, and then after that, CDC Rothman will then deal with the operations of the Act, and then the rest of the team members will come in as and when there are questions, so that we have a cluster approach in the presentation. So without any waste of time, I'll give over to Advocate Durant to start the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Without my further ado, I think we want to indicate that from a JDPS cluster perspective, we view this matter as extremely important. It is in actual fact a priority in the delivery agreement, and we have been monitoring it and ensuring that there are proper coordination between the departments in terms of this. I think that in terms of the interaction between the role players, in terms of this specific amendment act, I can state that in terms of slide 3, thank you, that we started to interact even before we had an act. We dealt with it at a goal already in an integrated fashion. And in this regard, we had very good interaction that led to look how we need to deal with the legislation as well as implementation plans pertaining to that. I think what we also need to indicate is that from a criminal justice system continuum perspective, we are extremely worried that we don't just focus on one area, but that we look at what are the causes for the remand detainees and why they are there for long periods and time. And in this regard, we've made sure that we start to look at how do we deal with case flow management, how do we make cases speedier, how do we ensure that we use alternative dispute resolution mechanisms, and how do we focus specifically on all those long outstanding cases so that they are not just an issue for correctional services but for the whole cluster. In terms of the next slide, the number of criminal court cases are increasing in terms of the space that we are dealing with that, and I really want to indicate that as for the past financial year, for the first time since 2009, we have had a meeting of a target in terms of improved case finalization. We've said that we want to improve this by at least 10% by 2014, and we want to improve it at least 2% by quarter. But by this first quarter of 2012, we in actual fact achieved a 9.8% increase in cases finalized. And I think that is a good indication of how the various role players within the criminal justice system, from police, the NPA, the judiciary, all are starting to pull their weight and making sure that there are proper interaction. I think in this regard, we've also instituted backlog courts in this regard, and I think at the moment we have nearly 83 of them that are functioning, and we have, as a result of that, managed to not only stabilize the portals but also help reduce the numbers of cases that are outstanding. Chair, I think we've also looked at starting to look at what are contributing factors to crime that leads to people that end up committing crime and then end up as awaiting crime or remand detainees in the facility. So far, the social crime prevention strategy has been finalized and it has been approved by Cabinet, and it is something that we are looking to implement and deal with in this year to ensure that we also deal with the causes of crime. But I want to indicate, Chair, that on an average, on a year-to-year basis, we have been managing to decrease the number of remand detainees that are in the facilities. There's still too many because in terms of overcrowding, etc., we realize that we need to reduce them even more. But I think at the moment, at the end of middle of August, we've had about 45,000 remand detainees. But here I think there's one factor that is perhaps not mentioned in the slide and I want to bring to your attention, and that is the number of children that are in remand detention. I think that is one of the sore points for the cluster that we've been looking at very specifically to ensure that there are as little as possible children that are remanded in detention. We want zero, but in actual fact, we've managed to reduce the numbers over the past few years from more than 1,500 to, at the moment, 185. And we are looking at each of those cases to see how we can deal with it as a matter of urgency. I think what's further important is to say that we've also looked at the period of time that the persons are incarcerated as remand detainees, and we have seen that most of them, these 45,000 people that we talked about, are there for only 3 to 4 months. Then they are changed and the new numbers or new people are in there. The actual people that are there for longer than 2 years is a very small percentage. It's only about 6%. And those 6% cases are being monitored by the cluster specifically. We've got a profile of each of them, and we are looking at each of those cases in order for them to be prioritized and to ensure that we finalize them as quickly as possible. One of the good news, a bit of good news that we have is that the case that's there for the longest period of time, the Boeremark Park, all the persons have now been convicted and just waiting for sentencing. So they'll be out of the remand detention side and perhaps, we don't know yet, but they might change to the sentence section. But here, I think what we are saying that from our side, we are monitoring these cases, all the long, lengthy ones, and what has happened is that on a monthly basis, we get those names and figures from DCS, we circulate it to the police, to the detective side, we circulate it to all the DPPs and the prosecutors, and we circulate it to Legal Aid South Africa so that everyone can monitor each of those cases and make sure that they try and prioritize it, where they're not case ready, that they do ensure that they are case ready, if they are on trial or part here, that those matters be prioritized as quickly as possible. So we are monitoring those in terms of the profiles that have been established. So I think it's in this backdrop that the Correctional Matters Amendment Act was approved. We've looked at the various sections that relate to these aspects, and I'm not going to deal with them in detail, but what we've done also from the cluster side is to look at specifically those sections that might have an impact on the cluster. And we've drafted protocols to deal with those matters so that the intersectorally agreed upon, there's guidelines, there's practices, and there's standard operating instructions that goes from police, from the prosecutors, from the Justice Department to the relevant role players to ensure that they deal with those things in an intersectoral manner. Chair, I think in terms of what we've dealt with in terms of preparing for the implementation of the Act. As you've indicated in the beginning, regulations were developed and they were approved and are in place. From correctional side, we've had a whole range of people that have been trained on the Act as well as the regulations. From our side, we looked at those regulations even before they were finalized and we helped shape them in terms of a cluster to ensure that we can implement and deal with it. From justice aside, we informed all the registrar's courts, the regional heads, the judicial heads of courts, as well as the court managers about the establishment of the remand facilities, as well as we put these type of information on our website, we sent out circulars, and we've given guidelines now to deal with these matters. From the prosecuting authority side, we've established the interaction with the various directors of public prosecution. We've sent protocols to all the regions and we've emailed it in actual fact to every prosecutor that has an email address. Legal Aid South Africa created a website and a web page specifically to track these cases that are pending for longer than 2 years, and they started to develop modules that will deal with familiarizing all the Legal Aid South Africa practitioners to familiarize them with the various sections such as Section 49G. I've already indicated that we are dealing with these things in an integrated manner. We've established intersectoral national integrated cycle management forums and a national committee that oversees that, and this is overseen by the court judiciary. it's so important for us that we've even made the Chief Justice involved. And if you've read the media recently, honourable members, you would have seen that the Chief Justice has indicated that from the judiciary, they've had action plans to ensure that the case flow management is now fully taken on board by the judiciary, both the higher court and the lower court, and that they deal with the monitoring of cases as well as dealing with matters such as remand detainees in a prioritized manner. From police side, the National Commissioner distributed the act to all the various heads and of component and divisional commissioners as well as provincial commissioners. They looked at the various operational policies that were required and they amended them and aligned them with the various provisions and regulations of the act. From the police side, Chair, I think if we look at, they may only detain remand detainees for a period of 7 days. They will be dealing with if there are questions in terms of those aspects. But what we've done is to ensure that there are policies in place, that there are guidance in place, and that there are training in place to look at the investigation officers expedite these investigations as quickly as possible. We've looked at also in terms of consultation between the police and correctional services. And I think in this regard, we're looking at if there are any stumbling blocks at any stage, we deal with it immediately through an integrated process. One example that I can perhaps mention is dealing with, for example, something like transport where there are long distances that need to be covered between correctional service facilities and the courts and where these cases need to be dealt with. We've looked at those, we've looked at possible guidelines from correctional services and police standing orders to be amended and aligned with these aspects, and in that regard we try to resolve any stumbling blocks that might arise. See, in brief, from a trusted perspective, we want to assure you that we are not going to rest on our laurels. We continue to monitor the implementation of this Act, and we will continue to assist wherever we can to deal with this as effectively as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Chair, honourable members, I will deal with the different sections of the Act first, the ones that are already implemented, and then we'll move to the ones that are not yet implemented. The first section would be the establishment of the Correctional Centres and Remand Detention Facilities, Section 5.1 of the Correctional Matters Amendment Act. These are specifically where we establish remand detention facilities that are specialised. So we have done that in terms of the gazette, and that gazette list has been circulated to all cluster departments. And as the Executive Round said, we are within the cluster dealing with any challenges that may arise in terms of what constitutes a remand detention facility if any of those arise. Then in terms of Section 5.2b, which is what Claire has spoken about already, it's the issue of not keeping remand detainees in police cells for longer than 7 days. In this regard, between SAPS and DCS, both have set this call to instructions to all their officials, and DCS has issued circulars in this regard to say that any previous agreements, or with the implementation of this section, it means all previous agreements between SAPS and DCS are no longer valid. Between SAPS and DCS, also as Advocate Durant has indicated, we are meeting regularly to address any challenges that may arise in this particular section. We go then to the Section 49D of mentally ill remand detainees. I know this was very much debated this morning also in terms of mentally ill that are held within the centres. There are two issues here. The one is the protocol and procedure to be followed in cases of psychiatric observations, and I think this is maybe where some of the confusion came in this morning. Is a person that we are holding in remand detention, is it a remand detainee that is awaiting psychiatric observation in the course of their time, or is it somebody that a court has already declared a state patient who is awaiting a transfer into a mental health facility? For both those, for the first one in terms of the awaiting trial, a protocol has been developed. It has been presented to the cluster. It's at this stage been withdrawn, but ready to be presented again. The issue of where DCS officials notice potential mental illness in remand detainees, we have a process there which includes also referral to medical practitioners, but also very importantly to inform people within the cluster that have an interest there, like the NTA, that they are aware of what has been picked up within the DCS facilities. One very positive thing that has come out is the J7 amendment, where we are saying that at the moment, in order for us to monitor this kind of thing, we need to know who is in our centres and why they are there. The current J7, the warrant that we receive in our DCS facility, doesn't necessarily show endorsement that this person is an observation case. In the new J7 that's being developed, that will in fact be indicated on it. We will then be able to follow and monitor these cases in our facilities. If I may then go to section 49F, which is the release of remand detainees under supervision for further investigation, the section itself is that if staff needs remand detainees for further investigation, there is a new form that has been developed, Form 127A, with which they request the release of that remand detainee into police custody. Now, between SAPS and DCS, there have been various ways of dealing with it. We say there must be, depending on how long the remand detainee is going to be placed in police custody, who has that delegation of allowing that. We were saying it must clearly be monitored how long are people being surrendered to SAPS and on what basis. We have here both within DCS and SAPS officials that were trained on it. I've mentioned the SAP 127A, which was developed, and since April 2012, we've had 243 remand detainees temporarily surrendered to SAPS. If I may now move to the sections that are not yet promulgated, there are three sections that we are dealing with. The first section is section 48. This is provision of uniformed remand detainees, obviously a very new section where all remand detainees will be issued with uniform. There are two different issues here. The one is the remand detainee uniform, which clearly identifies the remand detainee within our centres so that we are able to, for security purposes. But there's also a second section of the Act which says that we cannot allow remand detainees to appear in court in that uniform. Where remand detainees do not have clothes themselves, then BCS is obliged to present court clothes, which are not distinctive. They're not printed or anything like that, but merely for their ability to appear in court without the remand detention uniform. The colour of the uniform itself will be yellow, with the word remand detainee written in a circle, similar to what we find with sentence defenders. As I've indicated, shoes and court clothes will be issued to those remand detainees who need it. We've looked at how this can be implemented in a fashion that doesn't disrupt things. Remind detainees who are admitted to overnight, we state that they will not be issued with the uniform, but once they stay with that longer than one night, they will be issued with that uniform. We've estimated, we've given an estimate, and we've been advised to work on four uniforms per remand detainee in order to cater for possible scenarios and taking into account the huge turnover of remand detainees that we have. As we've indicated there, 20% of the uniform has been procured, and the balance of the uniform material needed will be procured in this financial year. The uniform themselves will be produced within our correctional centres, and we anticipate a day full remand detainees to uniform to be 1 May 2014. 49E is another section that's not yet implemented. It's the referral of severely incapacitated or criminally ill remand detainees to court. A protocol has been developed and it's been approved by the cluster DG. The issue here was very much to develop processes that are agreed within the cluster and everybody's very clear on their responsibilities in terms of the section. So although previously there have been referrals of people who are ill to court, or there have been information going to court to say this remand detainee cannot appear in court because he or she is ill, we now have in place very proper processes in terms of this protocol, in terms of what needs to happen one after the other. So there will be a referral to the medical doctor for treatment, and once there is a medical report that says that this person is in fact severely incapacitated or terminally ill, other than treatment obviously being provided to them while they're within the centre, the head can decide to refer this medical report, may also take account of the resource that we have in terms of the medical advisory board for further medical opinion, and may then refer that to the to prosecution, to NPA, in terms of them issuing a certificate whether they oppose or not. But then ultimately the point would be for a court to decide, based on further information that's given to them by medical doctors, whether this person still needs to remain within our centre. The processes are listed here in detail, and within the cluster, various forms, affidavits, reports have been developed so that it should be a fairly simple process for headless centres and anybody at any level to be able to fully understand the process. If I may then move to section 49G, which is the referral support based on length of detention, which, as the chair has indicated, is being debated currently. The section is not yet implemented, but sets out that the maximum incarceration period is 2 years from the initial date of admission into our advanced detention facilities. Now, the issue here is not that we're saying after 2 years everybody must be released, but in fact, what we need to do is ensure that a court makes the decision taking into account the fact that this remand detainee has been in custody for this period of time. So bearing that in mind, from DCS's side, we are developing a system so that we are very clear on being able to identify everybody within our centres that are reaching their 2 years or are 3 months before their 2 years, giving us the opportunity to allow when they go to court to have all the documents in place to inform the court to say this person is now reaching 2 years within our facility, and the judicial officer needs to make an assessment on whether they need to remain. Other than the second, what is also happening, as Grant also mentioned it, is that there is an ongoing reporting within the cluster on people that are within our facility 6 months or more that is dealt with within the local CAFO management. And that continues regardless of the implementation of the section. And I've indicated the issue at the moment in terms of not implementing this is an IT solution where we can be absolutely sure that we are not missing people within our centre. And what we have been discussing is that in anticipation of that section being implemented, we would look at the 3 month period prior to that to be able to deal with the backlog, because obviously prior to the section we do have people in our centres that are here for longer than 2 years. Currently, that figure as of 7 August was 2,606 remand detainees in our centres for longer than 2 years. So these would need to be dealt with in anticipation of the implementation of this section. Partly really the administration of medical parole, because it was set as part of the issues to be dealt with today in terms of the Correctional Matters Amendment Act. But as we've indicated there, a full presentation was made to the Portfolio Committee on this issue on the 7th of August. So yeah, we haven't dealt with that within this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There is the presentation, members. You can field questions, make your observations, so that the stakeholder departments go away from here more informed if there's things that we pick up in the field. The reason we call is because we do oversight, and we are rooted in the community, and some of these things we see happening every day, and we want to be able to reconcile the theory that you're giving us with the practice that we find on the ground. So I'll open it up to members if anybody wants to, and you just indicate which authority you think you want to address your question to so that they could prepare. Just to remind you again, we've got SAPS, we've got NPA, we've got Department of Justice, we've got Legal Aid Board, and we've got DCS. We'll start with Baba Zbavu, then we'll go to Mambaliso, and then Manir Abraham.
Thank you, Chairperson. Only general note, the first presenter talk about 9.8 decrease on the remand detention. Is that figure set aside you? We were talking about slide number four. Slide number four, paragraph three. Plus minus 9.8, the result of inside cash flow management intervention. Are you set aside that that figure is compatible to the figure that's supposed to be taking place? Then again, if you come down to slide number five, if you compare to 46,000, 53,000, then you end up with 45,000 again. Unlocked total for men detainees was 45,000. I don't get this idea here. Can you just explain yourself on that matter? I'll be very glad if you can.
The second thing, Chairperson, that I wanted to raise is the slide number 9, the impact on the adequacy function of the SAPS. It says the attention and detection of any ATD longer than 7 days become unlawful if the application. What happens if a person became more than 2 years? Whose fault? Is it the fault of the DCS or is it the fault of the police? Who is the fault of the courts? Whose fault it is? Because that's where I have a problem. If a person is detained more than 2 years. The last one, the person, is slide number 12. SAPS and DCS continue to meet the national person to solve challenges related to implementation of this section. What does that mean? Can the presenter elaborate that? What does it mean? Is there any challenges? If there are challenges, what are those challenges? Because they are not there, tabulated on the slide. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mine is on the remand detention branch and legal aid. The first one, Chairperson, what I want clarity on is whether these 2,606 women, youth, which center is it? So one was really appreciating a breakdown of it. Because in some centers, you've got more than 50 youth that will tell you that I'm more than 4 years here, I'm more than 3 years here, more than 2 years here. So I would really appreciate if there is a detail about this figure that we've got here. The legal aid, really we appreciate your presence today. In the sense of your absentia is really a cause of concern. We are overcrowded. We've got overcrowded centers. And these overcrowded centers, people are not rehabilitated. Point number one. Sex offenders going there because of the delay of the backlog of cases. Youth come out more dangerous than they were when they went into those centers operational. So, and the cry out is, we've got no legal aid. Either they are not available, either they come and there's delay of cases, they are not explaining to us what are the developments, they just cry that there is a vacuum of this wherever we go. Please explain to us this pending longer, there's a backlog that you have. Which centers are these centers? One would appreciate also detail if you can provide this committee with either a readout of these pending cases that are more than 2 years, so that one can also trace and compare is it the center that we have already had oversight at, or of which centers are we talking here about, so that one can monitor, are you reaching the centers throughout the country? Chairperson, the transport issue also on slide 9, is it a 9? The transport of the transport issue is also an issue. Because the transport, that is where we get the escape and the danger for society. We have, as this committee, we have given an advice of every time when we come to the judge, when we elaborate on the justice cluster, we will also advise this as always, can't you discuss at the cluster the question of courtrooms nearby your correctional center? Because it's really, sometimes when we come to work, here in Cape Town,
and these full vans, police vans, will pass with the blue lights, and it will be packed. We don't know if they're waiting trial or who are they, or are they hardcore criminals, but it will be full. And we see the danger of that these people, it's very easy to escape. A van packed full like that, it's just to keep that door open and then take your way into society back again. So really, one needs to address this, or the justice cluster really need to discuss this in depth. I thank you.
Abraham?
Why don't you push it? Chairperson, I'm trying to understand why I don't understand. Chairperson, firstly, the question I'm asking is to whom it may concern, the responses. Has the department conducted an audit of the number of mentally ill as well as severely incapacitated remand detainees in DCS facilities? And what is the status of such remand detainees in our facilities? Second one, Chair, the advocate Durant spoke about the fact that the cluster is looking at ways and means of determining a crime prevention strategy in order to address the high levels of crime. How long does the advocate think? Is it an ongoing project? Or is there any time limits? Are we expecting something to flow out of it? And of course, what I would be very interested to know, Chairperson, is what are the root causes that are causing these high levels, and that I suppose we'll only find out once the strategy has been thoroughly canvassed and worked at. Because, Chairperson, we are the receiving department at the end of the chain, but there's something gravely wrong in our society when we hear that in Nigeria, with a population of over 200 million, you have 45,000 people in their correctional facilities, and we're sitting with about 150,000, 160,000. I don't know whether many of their people have been exported to us or what, but in any case, it doesn't sound right. And we need to do very urgently as a society, as a community, as a country. Then, dear person, what are the major contributing factors that there are still remand detainees, 2,606 of them in our facilities, who are there for more than 2 years? And has the cluster a plan as to how it intends addressing it? The chairperson, I have many more, but may I just try to understand two more? Advocate Durand said here in one of the slides, this writing is so small I can't even make it out, number 7 I think, that copies of the protocol that was developed have been distributed to all regions and emailed to those prosecutors who have an email address. Now there, my first question is, Can Mr. Durant, I'm perhaps placing too much of a burden on him, give us an estimate of how many such prosecutors are there that are not connected to this latest electronic devices? And if so, what steps are being taken to see that it reaches the entire prosecutorial fraternity? And finally, Chairperson, something that worries me very much, and that is where we find that various trusted departments will meet, they will discuss, they will talk, the fundis will start recording everything, but then later on we find that very little really comes out of it. The question is, are all the sectoral role plays singing from the same hymn book? Are we getting people encapsulated to see the severity of the problems and to address them? Or is it a question of, ja, God, ek het 'n job, man, you know, van 9 uur werk toe, kom 4:30 terug huis toe, hulle Gods water maar oor Gods akker loop. That's the sort of tendency that I find in the public service. And that is a worrying factor. What I find is that there is no dedication, there is a lack of commitment, and I must also admit there are those in the minority who are committed. So are we seeing it filtering through? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, sir. Honorable Kleiner.
Thanks, Chairperson. This one is on legal aid. There are serious allegations levelled against legal aid whenever I was visiting centers. In a number of instances, they advise awaiting detainees to plead guilty. Now, I just want to say that will not have an impact in what we're trying to do. And on the same vein, they also say that they don't come for consultation before going to court. I think that has an impact as well in what we're trying to do insofar as overcrowding concerns. Last is, Chair, I don't know whether this one, I told it from a point of view from Matthias and Dambos. The uniform for remand detainees. Everything, maybe this one is not related to this aspect of the report, but what I just want to find out, have we thought about the mechanism that will ensure that we don't overspend taxpayers' money? I'm referring in a situation where Chase is a remand detainee and he gets this uniform to attend to court on this particular day. What happens after 16 sentence to the uniform?
Thank you. Thank you very much. So that we have some order here and we make you feel the pain, which DCS Portfolio Committee likes to do, the way we're going to manage this process is that we're going to ask Legal Aid Board to take the stage and we are going to grill you till we finish with you. Then we are going to move to NPA, then we are going to move to SEPS, then we're going to move to SASIS, and then we'll end up with DCS. So we're not all over the show. So there's been a few questions already raised with Legal Aid Board. You have an opportunity to respond and members will follow up if they need to follow up. And when we think we're done with you, we'll move over to the next one. If you can take the first round of questions that were posed to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee today. Now, the honourable members said that they appreciate our presence today, and I thank the invitation to this committee as well. When we talk about juveniles or children under the age of 18 in custody, that was one of the issues raised. In terms of the Child Justice Act, which came into effect on 1st of April 2010, each child has to be legally represented. If child cannot afford private legal representation, we lay appears for every single one of those children. We have a special project as well where we monitor each of those waiting child detainees who are kept in custody. We are in constant contact with social development to find out if there are places of safety where they can go. And what we discover when children are kept in facilities in correctional services, it's for various number of reasons. For example, the child has misbehaved, the child has escaped from that particular place of safety, the child has caused trouble at that particular place of safety, etc., and there are many reasons for that. Then, regarding awaiting trial detainees who have been in custody for any length of period, Legal Aid South Africa has a special, has appointed special paralegals who deal with remand detainees and who visit the prisons which contain the most remand detainees. They visit the prisons every single day and they consult with these remand, and if they don't have legal representation, the legal aid application is actually completed If the first appears in Stellenbosch, it will then be sent to the Stellenbosch Justice Centre. We will then ensure that legal aid is appointed for that particular accused person, and it is taken from there. Then, regarding the last questions on legal aid, about one detainee being told to plead guilty, we have a special quality program in place, legal quality monitoring program in place, in terms of which before any person pleads guilty, that it runs through the guilty plea is discussed with a supervisor, and the supervisor either agrees or does not agree. And legal aid does not have a high rate of guilty pleas either. We don't just plead guilty. So that might be, I'm not sure where that's coming from. Maybe if the honourable member can give us some more information, we can look at it specifically for a specific court. If it's a specific court, if it's a specific practitioners, I'm not sure. Then don't. The other concern was that Legal Aid South Africa does not come for consultation before going to court. Every practitioner has a consultation day. And once per week, and what happens on that consultation day, if they arrange to see the awaiting, the demand detainees, they arrange to again see the accused persons, and they consult with them. They will then come back to court on the day that the matter is set out for trial and do what is necessary to facilitate legal representation for the accused. I don't know if there's anything else.
No,
there's
definitely going to be lots more.
Thank you.
On legal aid, let me kick it off. You see, you indicate to us that everybody that's awaiting trial that needs legal aid, in other words, that doesn't have private practice lawyers, gets the service. Now, of the 45,000, I can tell you that probably 40,000 don't have private lawyers. So the first question that you must respond to is, how many legal aid practitioners do you have? Last year, we knew that the caseload was something like 500 to 1 person. Just last year. When you talk about the number of, whether it's paralegals or whoever, how many of them do you have if you can come to Parliament and say to you that every one of the 40,000 have legal representation? Now, do you have 45 people or do you have one person, and how many people does he or she deal with? That's the essence of that first question. The other point I wanted to make with you, ma'am, is that indeed, if I don't know where you come from in terms of your provincial location, but we can take you now, today, to a correctional facility of your choice, and we will prove to you that these inmates don't see the legal practitioner until the day of their appearance. We can prove that to you at the center of your choice. So you do them, one of us will go there with you. First, legal aid quality sucks. Let us just put it straight to you. Legal aid South Africa's quality sucks. Not only from the perspective of the inmates, but even ourselves. And then we'd want this cluster to be able to at least hear our sentiment and deal with it. The caseload doesn't make it possible, ma'am, for you to deal with everybody. We are saying that to you from our... It does not make it possible. Secondly, the overcrowding situation facilities. I'm not sure where you do your consulting. You can hardly go to a facility in South Africa where there's a consulting room like you can find in a lawyer's facility. Now, we're talking about things that we pick up every day. We should have said to you, but we send it to people that come after you. When you speak to the committee, either tell us the truth or keep quiet. And we're not assuming that anybody's lying to us. Either tell us the truth or keep quiet, because we'll be able to throw back into your face all the contributions that you're putting to us. So, how many people are there that are dealing with them? Which court, which city you have to go to today if you need to, and we will take it to a waiting trial people who will say to you, we've not seen somebody come to talk to us. And thirdly, and it might not just be yours, but I'm saying one of the practical realities that you're going to pick up is that there are no facilities conducive for consultation. Simple and clear. There are no facilities in our centers that are conducive. You can't come talk to me about my case in the midst of 1,000 people or in the 4 years somewhere. Now, it's not your problem. But this cluster must deal with that matter. Otherwise, we're going to hammer you forever. We are not apologetic about hammering you, but it will be outside of your hands. So those are the issues that I'd like you to address from my side. Anybody else wants to deal with legal aid or do we move on? Advocate Max.
Jay, I just have to illustrate.
The legal aid has said we must be as specific as possible. So let's not generalize. Let's be as specific when it comes to legal aid.
I just want to prove this thing of our people that we experience in the sentence doesn't have pass in legal aid. And I'm not referring or claiming that that is the general capacity of lawyers appearing for members. But only a personal experience. Now in May, June, I represented the police officer for 3 charges of corruption, the regional one. That to me was a lawyer from Legal Aid. This poor man is a Berghi. Now his wife is dead the next day and everybody was drunk. But you could see there in this, in the sense, he was never consulted. Or poorly consulted. Even so much so, when he was convicted, that the prosecutor said that man should not be even in the box because everybody was drunk. Then, the witness is called for mitigation. That witness was never briefed or consulted. Witness was standing there asking questions. The witness don't know where to, what to answer, don't know what is the procedure, whatever. So if the prosecutor, and I saw this legal aid lawyer, I said, young, the accusations are very highly against people. She said with a struggle, she said, yeah, we know about that one. But they know what they stand for. In a nonchalant manner. I said to myself, I will never use legal aid. Not under these circumstances. That man is 3 years sent to jail. So the point I would like to make is I'm not saying everybody is like that. The capacity of your lawyer representing these people and where we come from. Most of them are illiterate in the youngsters there. And they rely on the advice of you because this person's freedom is in your hands. And they believe what you are telling them. I'm not saying that they actually mislead them. But what I'm saying is they have to look at the competency of people representing these people.
Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation also. Chair, on a later date, I'm happy today because they're here with us. Really, Chair, when we go for oversight nationally, all the mind detainees, they're not happy about them. They don't have even confidence on the legal aid. So I was proposing, Chair, that when we go to oversight, we need to invite them to be with us so that you must hear what they are saying to us and get informed immediately. And the witness of that case, when we go to the awaiting trial, you'll find overcrowding. But when you ask this inmate, will tell you that I do have a lawyer. And the lawyer that I'm having is a legal aid lawyer. And there's no communication. Sometimes at the court, I don't see that person. So really, it was a concern of this committee in terms of the budget, because we know that they are getting money from the government. Maybe that's why they don't take their work serious, because that's what So, Chair, really, as in our people are not happy about them. Unless they must prove to us how many people that have saved by them, then maybe we can say the inmates are lying. But really, if we can go with them, hey, they'll witness what we're saying here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, ma'am. Can you respond to those questions and any other comments you would want to make, and then we'll move over to the MPA.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chi, I will advise you my provincial location. I'm the regional operations executive for the Western and the Northern Cape. So I practice in the two areas and I oversee all the justice centres, of which there are 12 in the three in the Northern Cape and 9 in the Western Cape. The number of staffing in this region for legal practitioners, we have at least one practitioner for every single court in the Western Cape and in the Northern Cape.
We're asking, you have one practitioner for every single court. The question is that we must ask you how many awaiting trial people go to that court. Our question is, if there are 45,000 awaiting trial people, and let's assume there's 10,000 in your area.
Yeah.
How many of those 10,000 people are, let's assume they all need legal aid, for instance.
Yes.
How many of them are being serviced by you? We understand you have one person, but are you saying that legal aid person in courtroom one in Bloemfontein?
Yes.
Deals with all awaiting trial people from Bloemfontein. Is that how it works?
Exactly. It deals with all the people who appear, all the bond detainees who would appear in that particular court who would ask for legal aid. In some instances, people say, no, they don't want legal aid, they don't want legal representation. But as soon as someone requests legal representation, say, for example, in Blue Down Court, where I went on Monday this week, if Blue Down Court says someone, we want legal representation, legal aid is there to take the application, it's handed the attorney in the district court, and if you're a fully qualified attorney in the regional court, and we also have in the High Court here in Western Cape. So as soon as someone applies for legal aid, the demand detainee applies for legal aid, it will come from one of two sources. Either when the person is at court and applies on their own, that person is appearing in court, alternatively, if at that stage the person did not want legal representation but changes his or her mind at a later stage, the paralegal who visits the court, the prisons every day, they will take the application there and forward it to us. So that is how we cover the demand detainees.
We're not fighting with you. We want to understand the thing. Again, let me put the question to you. You are saying that you have a representative in Blue Downs Court. Let me use it as an example. 10 people come to Blue Downs Court today. All 10 of them ask for legal assistance today. You've got one individual in Blue Downs Court. You've got 10 people. Even if they came in different hours, I accept that. The question that we are asking is that individual goes back to Portsmouth or wherever. Who services them there? Is it just one person? And that's why you're asking the question, is one person sufficient to look after 10 people? That's the question they're asking. And if it's not, let us admit that there's a workload problem and let's deal with it. Because 45,000 people are waiting trial. Our records are showing us that I'm not heard and we don't accept the inmate's word as gospel half of the time, quite honestly. We don't accept it as gospel. But I can sleep easy tonight and say to you, I'm yet to hear one individual saying, we've had representation, we're happy that this individual, who is our legal representative, comes and gives us the necessary work. That's what I'm saying to you. It's not about in the court. It's about where he is. He goes to court for one day, he goes back. He goes to court in 6 months' time. In between today and 6 months' time, he has had no preparation. He only sees the person in court again. If that is the practice that you guys are having, we are saying that that practice is not acceptable. That's all that we are saying. Now, we can change it, but our records will show that if you are only seeing him when he goes to court, as you are indicating it is, we must put it on record that that is not serving our people. And if it's a money matter, we will take it to the budget department. If it's a matter of not enough people, let's say so that we go and find candidate lawyers. I think that's the point we're making. Otherwise, this law will not be implemented. And that's the question that we want all of you to answer. Is this law implementable under the current resources? If not, tell us so that we can make it implementable. I think that's the question that we are asking. Do you want to say something, sir, on this matter of legal aid?
Thank you, Chair. I think what we need to deal with perhaps is to ask the committee to give Legal Aid South Africa the opportunity to do a proper presentation here at this committee, indicating their resources, indicating their challenges, indicating how they deal with their aspects. Because I think, for example, if you just look at the factual situation, then there are basically constraints here in the area. We have less than 3,000 legal aid practitioners countrywide that has to deal with all of these matters. And for the last financial year, they dealt with 382,000 criminal matters. Now, if you look at the numbers of people against the number of cases that they are dealing with, etc., then obviously there are issues that can arise. So I really want to suggest to you, Chair, that to get legal aid, to do a proper presentation here that can give all the various aspects. We have been working with Legal Aid South Africa to deal with a variety of aspects. For example, there is currently a protocol that's been developed to deal with consultation processes between DCS, Legal Aid, and SAPS as well. And I think those are the sort of things that we can bring to the committee to deal with as such a thing. Thank you.
There's a proposal, and I think we accept it. I also want to say that you're not personal, but we certainly, as the committee, are going to take you on if you bring these topics. Not about being personal or anything like that, but there's a proposal that Legal Aid be given an opportunity to do whatever they want to do. I think we can accommodate that. But we can allow you, ma'am, so I don't think, if we accept that proposal, we can allow you to wrap up, and then certainly we'll communicate with you where we can have a longer meeting. If you choose to deal with some of these other issues so that you're not just Legal Aid. We'll put you on for another day. You're not just Legal Aid, ma'am.
Peterson. Honorable Winnie Gwenya made a suggestion. And it's a long outstanding one. It's a long cry out of this portfolio looking for reps of Legal Aid to come and engage with us. And that's why they invite that at our oversight, they are also invited when we ask them. Then the head of centers will say, we did invite Legal Aid. No one pitched. It's not that we don't want their information. We are looking for information so that we can engage one another and advise one another accordingly. But there is a vacuum. That's what I said when I made my statement.
All right. Member, we will allow you if you want to do anything, and we certainly formally invite you to come and talk to us specific to Legal Aid challenges. But you can wrap up if you so wish, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think when I explained earlier, I just want to go back and just explain, I agree with the proposal of Advocate Yolande that we should have a presentation, and we look forward to coming to address this committee. And it is correct what Advocate Yolande says. We dealt with almost 400,000 criminal cases in last year. We do see all ORDs, we either see them at prison where we take the legal aid application, or we see them at court. But remember, that's the first time we may have seen them at court. But then a consultation is done thereafter, before the person goes to trial. And what some of the courts have been doing these days is actually postponed for consultation, so the accused will be brought to court and we will consult at court with that accused person. Then, I just wanted to discuss one other thing. Mr. Leonard Max earlier advised of a matter which had been heard when we were sitting with someone else Legal Aid. If you could advise us of the actual information and tell me who the person was, then I can address the issue on that. And then, regarding the oversight committee, I know that certain correctional services, we have a provincial stakeholders meeting and where we meet with all the stakeholders, DOJ, correctional services, NPA, etc. And I don't think we've ever in my time been invited to any oversight committee, and it's something I get with Mr. Carlos as well. When I met Judge Shabalala earlier on about oversight, because there was only one time we were invited, and that was when Mr. Dennis Bloom, I think, was still the chairperson, and Judge Nathan Erasmus was the judge of the JIOP. That's the only time we've been invited, but we have never, as far as I know. So if I can please have the information of when we've been invited, we will certainly attend, because I would also like to attend. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all from my side of this.
All right. Just so that we clarify from our side, we do oversight occasionally. We will definitely send to you people that tomorrow we're going to Portsmouth, send somebody to accompany us to Portsmouth. The second part of it is that we normally have a type of stakeholders meeting, whatever it is that we speak about. We will certainly also send to you. Tomorrow we're talking about ITV cameras or whatever it is. If you're interested in coming to talk to us, we will certainly do that. And we will set up a meeting where we will dedicate the entire time to Legal Aid and the Legal Aid challenges, and hopefully members will be able to cover specifics from your various areas. So that's going to help us. If you can go and talk to inmate number one in Johannesburg, medium B, and we certainly will cover that information there. All right. Thank you very much. National Prosecuting Authority.
Sorry, could I just say something? You say there's no such session at all for tomorrow.
No. We're saying if we do that, we will invite you.
Thank
you. Okay. Does anybody want to pose a question to the National Prosecuting Authority?
We've already posed the questions.
Oh, did we close the letter? Okay. You, I beg your pardon, I'm so lost. You'll respond to the little ones, and then we will fire on you as well. Okay. Right, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. The question that was posed relates to the last paragraph regarding the protocols being distributed to all the prosecutors who have email addresses. And the question was, what about those who do not have email addresses? The Director of Public Prosecution, the Chief Prosecutor, the Senior Prosecutors, always ensures that there's always a hard copy for those who do not have the email addresses. They get to see that they get to give they have they have the copies of the protocols, and to see to it that these protocols get to be understood in a way that is for better objective way of implementing these guidelines that are developed by the DPP's officers who are on the ground. Thank you.
Not, we can't let you. No, you can't follow up. You part of that, you answer. We can't let you go so easily, ma'am. Members must be tired. No, we'll come to you. Let me follow up, ma'am. You know, we were in Johannesburg and we always talk on what we pick up on the ground, not the one of your colleagues in Johannesburg, when we raised the question of long awaiting trials, said, you know, Chair, our problem is that people have a constitutional right to be represented or to be charged or whatever, to appear in court in the language of their choice. So somebody from Russia can come and say, I want this case to be proceeded in Russian. Somebody from Nigeria, I want it not only in Nigerian, it is such a language, but Nigerian limited. In other words, in that dialect. And the arguments that we were given, or the challenge that we were given, ma'am, is that one, these translators are few and far between. And therefore, the cases can't continue. Or secondly, because I'm the only Russian prosecutor in South Africa, translator, beg your pardon, not prosecutor, translator in South Africa, I then charge an exorbitant fee. Because I'm the only one that And the National Prosecuting Authority has said to us, the delays are because of these things. Now, nobody's raising it here with us. But it's helpful when you guys raise it with us so that we are able to take it to the necessary. I can tell you that we have that in Johannesburg. From the Gauteng leader of the NPA. Now, if Gauteng is having that problem, I would expect national at least to be the way of the Gauteng problem. Unless you say Gauteng were giving us an argument. But they're talking about the availability of translators, the cost of translators, because Vincent is entitled to be tried in Afrikaans. If that's my language. And you find that there's no Afrikaans translator, so the case drags, and it's... You remember we're talking about overcrowding, awaiting trial, and those type of things. Do you have that problem? Have you subsequently addressed this since the guy Johannesburg raised it with us? Or is it not a problem at all? If it is a problem, and you're only hearing about it now, go away and try and find a way of dealing with it, because it's an issue. Do you want to respond to that?
I know that the case flow management, they do see that those are the type of issues that they do discuss. I don't know, advocate, but to be able to give us an interest on that note.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add on to the previous question relating to the IT aspects, I want to indicate that the cluster is very well aware that we need to move towards everybody having emails, etc. There's a very small proportion of prosecutors that don't have it at the moment, and we're moving towards dealing with that. The challenge is that in some areas of the country, there's not power or there's not enough aspects to deal with those things, and we're trying to find solutions. But we're making sure that every prosecutor has hard copies to deal with these things. In terms of the interpreters, and specifically the foreign interpreters, this is a challenge. We recognize from the cluster perspective, and what we've done is to look at creating pools of interpreters, look at where are these people associated, how do we get them to the places where they are required, etc. The major challenge is in Gauteng, because that's where many of these people come in through the big economic centers that are there, etc. So Gauteng has very specific challenges. But we are dealing with that in consultation with a whole range of role players, the embassies, etc. We've got plans in place to help improve on that, but it is a major challenge. Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay. We feel comforted that you are aware, that we are aware and we're dealing with it. Anybody else at NPA? None? All right. Let's move to SAFS and deal with the original set of questions, and if there's follow-ups, we will then do the follow-ups. It's over to you, SAFS.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Chair, Glendis. I don't specifically see a question that has been directed to DataSets, and I'm so grateful for it. The only question that I can think of is what are the major contributors for remand detainees to be in detention for more than 2 years. Maybe I can try to answer that question. Chairperson, one of the reasons you've already alluded to, the translators, is a serious problem, especially the Asian people, people from Nigeria and then Pakistani and those type of countries. We have serious challenges regarding translators. The cases are postponed and remanded for various reasons. One of them that we are challenged with is blood analysis, histology, toxicology, DNA. And many of the cases are placed on high court roads, which are, there are few place and space available on the high court roads. So because of the series and the seriousness and the nature of these cases, they are remanded in custody without bail. So therefore, the case is on the high court road. That's one of the problems that we have. And then the other side, administrative matters are these that refuse to respond to their names, to come to court. And when they come to court, they are sick and they've got lots of reasons why the matter should not proceed. But as Advocate Aran says, we are addressing it. Specifically in my office, we are dealing with the long outstanding remand cases. And we are prioritizing it, and we are holding our people in provinces and stations accountable for the speedy finalization of those cases. I can say that most of these cases that are in court roll are trial ready, but because of other matters, it cannot be trialed. Thank you, sir.
Follow up?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, you see, I don't want to make this problem a problem basically for the prosecuting authorities and the investigative authorities only. Do I get the sense that the sort of people who come from foreign countries and who get involved in some other form of criminal activity, e.g. the Vietnamese who come here for, what I understand, our precious rhino horns and things, that we are getting the type of element into the country who is not a very kosher element, and that our legal framework in terms of the presence of foreign people in our country is not strong enough, or that it is very watery and that people slip in. So it becomes an issue for us now, where we are spending hours and hours. We're spending money in getting translators. We are spending money, 6,000 odd rand per inmate per month, looking after people who come from elsewhere and commit crime over here. Are you saying then that we should actually tighten up our influx into our country? The police chair, because they arrest people who actually are involved in misdemeanor in the country. And the extent of this problem.
Honourable Chair, the police is responsible to apply the law. We are bureaucrats. And I don't want to put myself in a position where I say the laws of the country is not effective. My job is to apply the law and to ensure and enforced the law. There are challenges with foreign nationals, but I'm not in a position to say that all foreigners that come to our country are involved in crime. I'm not going to say that. What I'm prepared to say is that there are challenges with foreign nationals, and maybe there is space where we can tighten up, but not all foreign nationals are involved in crime. And I would say a minority of foreigners are involved in crime, and also foreigners are also victims of crime. So that is also a challenge, that you have a victim that you need an interpreter for. So it goes both ways, but I don't want the bureaucrat to put my head on a block regarding our laws.
It's very flimmin' here. Time is less, and we're going to be a bit limited. But just, you don't have to comment. I'll come to you. We don't have to respond. Sometimes we're just going to be making comments for you guys to understand, like I'm going to do now. Where I come from, go to Florida police station on Friday night, and the police pick up everybody that they can find. Detain them on Friday night, appear in Rodenburg court on Monday, and the case is thrown away. In other words, police are arresting people because they can measure on how many arrests they make, not on how many prosecutions they find. Now that is part of the overcrowding problem, because police just arrest somebody that was drinking in Florida Zoo, like I'm near, what is the captain? Johnson. Zoo Lake Dahmanir. Guy was just walking around there, he gets arrested on Friday night, spends the whole day at the police station, the whole weekend. Goes to Rudapur court on Monday, the magistrate says there's no story. But the cop has registered an arrest for a week, and therefore he's doing his job. So that person, if there's no place at Florida, goes to prison, overcrowded place. Now I'm saying the police have to change this thing of arresting people so that I can be promoted to where I'll get promoted if I can prosecute somebody. And I think you must be aware of that, that's one of the things that we're raising with SEPs, and that we want SEPs to check for us. The arrest to investigate versus investigate to arrest. At the same time, prosecutor, let me say this to you. You know, you have a practice that after hours you have a standby prosecutor. Let me say to you that the standby prosecutor, together with the investigating officer as far as the police station, collude after they've arrested me on Friday at 9 o'clock and set bail, because they're the ones that set bail. That bail money doesn't even get recorded at the Florida police station, because between SEPs and that prosecuting authority after hours, they collude, because this person is desperate to go home. It's a weekend. There's no bail. We're raising these things with you because they're happening. We will give you the facts if you want them. I'm giving the police station. I'm saying to you, go to Mr. Rotenach, who is the station commander. Tell him that I've raised it with you and ask him to give you. I'm not saying you must do it. But when we talk to you, we talk to you about facts. We want the criminal justice system to work. There's collusion between prosecutors, not only after hours. At Sun City, or Deep Group, we were told that investigating officers deliberately don't take me to court on the day I must go to court, unless I'm going to pay him the money. I'm a remand detainee. Unless I pay the policeman some money, he will just keep me there. So I've got to bribe and say, look, man, can you take me to court? Because I might be innocent. But that investigating officer doesn't take me to court. These things are serious. And these things must be addressed. We don't see you guys every day. We are seeing you today. And if any of you are disputing or you want facts, please write to us. Our members will give you the facts. Names, addresses, times, and whatever. Okay. These are just comments we want to make. Do ask Mom Gwenya and yourself. If you just for comments, it's fine, so that they are aware of the challenges that they're in. Mom Gwenya, and then Akwan.
Thank you, Captain. Thank you, Captain. You covered me in terms of the investigator. Another information that we want to give to the SAS is the statement. The way the police write the statement, you find that a person has steal, but the statement doesn't say this person has steal, is writing something else, or murder or whatever. And those cases also make the image in a remind detainee stay long in the center because the statement was not written right. I would like also the staff to check their police station, the way they write their statement. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'll
look
on
that. Very quick. Chairperson, I would like to as much as we agreed on the presentation by the Legal Aid Board, the text also comes in, make the presentation precisely on the point that you raised. General Johnson knows we came from sergeant upwards to the ranks. Currently as a practice, and I presented a lot of these guys, is that SP6, if you know what I'm talking about, if there is a complaint and there's no arrest, it reflects bad. Now, every month there's a PCF, a Provincial Crime Combating Forum. Now, each commander got this, a list, it's like steps, it's like a robot, green, yellow, red. Now, once you're red, you're in trouble. Yellow is alright, green, you're tough. So, if you execute an arrest, then it exits green. Without an arrest, it goes to the red. So, it is so. It's a practice there. Can't deny it. The FCK is green. So, if there's an arrest and you go out Monday, that arrest has been noted in your SP6. So, that is a concern. That's definitely a concern. That otherwise, a particular shift is being monitored and see why there are too many arrests and no arrests. So it is a skeleton, and that contributes to this legal problem as well, and overcrowded things.
Do you wish to make any closing comments? You don't have to make it. These are real comments. These are things that you guys can internalize when you're not here, but at least you have a sense. Very briefly, sir. Okay.
There is another scratch. There is another scratch. And that is that we often hear that there are inmates transported in police vans, either from a facility to court or whichever way, and that some of these people get raped. I mean, it's common knowledge. We read about it on a regular basis. And there's criminal activity that takes place, for example, drug peddling. That sort of business is conducted by awaiting trialists going to and coming from the courts and stuff. What is the police doing to address that kind of activity? And what is the extent thereof? They don't have to respond out here, but we need to know these things.
We're still bringing it to your attention. I think it's an important one. We argue about separation in the facility. That's kind of a juvenile and an adult locked up in the same cell. But when they leave the cell going from Sun City to Fork Street, they're then in the same police van. It defeats the objective. So we're just raising it with you. If it's a practice, let's find a way. Or male and female. We know in Durban or somewhere where somebody was raised in transit. So these are the type of things that we are bringing to your attention for you talk to, as we think about implementing this amendment we will look at. Can we then move on to the Department of Justice? We really are late. We're going to kick out of here in the next 5 minutes. Department of Justice, you have to make your original question. If needs be, we'll call all of you back individually so that we can have a meaningful discussion. So this is just about labor. I think we just allow them to respond to those questions, and it needs to be, we will motivate for future. This is your last opportunity. We're not going to even ask you follow-up questions. So.
Thank you very much, Chair. In general, I think we really appreciate the guidance and the interaction of this committee. And from our side, we'll continue to ensure that if you do have visitors, etc., that from outside and from the cluster perspective, there are representation. In terms of the questions asked, the first one related to slide 4 in terms of the 9.8%. That's why I just need to clarify that. This hasn't anything to do with numbers of remand detainees. That number, what were indicated on that slide, relates to how many more cases have we finalized in the first quarter. So it's an indication that our system is starting to work better. And we are not satisfied, sir. We want to have 100% increase, but we're starting to move in the right direction. The whole of last year, we were in the red. We were minus 16% per quarter type of thing. And for the first time this year, this quarter, we moved to a positive 9.8%. And it's positive because it incorporates the work of all role players. If we don't have better investigation by police, we don't have speedier finalization of cases. If we don't have proper prosecutions, etc., we don't have legal aid dealing with their work, etc., in an efficient way, then we don't have the face cases finalized in this manner. And I think that's what we're trying to indicate in that positive sense. In terms of the slide 5, you wanted an explanation in terms of what an unlocked 25,000 people mean. The unlocked aspect is something that DCS uses as on a daily basis, how many people or at that period of time was in the system in terms of when they unlocked the doors at that point in time. So it's a phrase that's used by them that it indicates how many people basically we had in the system on that specific point in time. If we look at some of the other aspects, you wanted to know what happens if a person is detained longer than 2 years, whose fault is it? It's the whole system's fault, including the detainee at times, including the victims at times. We find that General Johnson has indicated some of the reasons why cases take long to be dealt with. But we've analyzed some of these cases that have been longer than 2 years. And I want to indicate to you that on the one slide we had 2,606 as a number of people that are longer than 2 years. Fortunately, if we look at the long periods of time, longer than 5 years, there's only approximately about 200 of them. If it's longer than 5 years, about 85 of them. And we're looking at the profiles of each of those cases. And some of those cases, like the Boomer, have had hundreds of postponements over 8 years. And some of them were not the result of anybody, but the system simply has to deal with those cases in that way. And we're not happy about it. We're trying to find solutions to improve in terms of that. Chair, in terms of the aspects of taking people with full vans to ports, etc., what we've done from our side is to look at audiovisual postponements, for example. We've looked at dealing with having ports closer to the communities, etc. But all of those things have budgetary aspects. And I think we're really trying to move to a system where we have as efficient a system as possible, but we need to find some solutions to that. And I think with the interaction of the portfolio committee, we will be successful at the end of the day. In terms of the number of audits, in terms of the issue of the crime prevention strategy, what are the root causes? I want to indicate that this is a strategy to look at how do we deal with the crime and the reasons for the crime, etc. And a lot of it has to do with legacies of the past. It has to do with poverty. It has to do with economic aspects, etc., and things like that. So this social crime prevention strategy looks at life at all the various levels where these things take place. What does a local authority has to do to improve the situation there? Cut grass so that there's not places where people can hide, etc. All those type of things. And I think it's led by the Department of Social Development, and I think this committee has time in it, perhaps, is something that they can look at a presentation in terms of what are those type of causes, etc. But it is something that government is already starting to implement. It's not just something that we are looking at in general. So from our side, it's already been implemented. Chair, I think in general, we've covered most of these aspects in terms of the things that you have mentioned. We've noted them all, and we will be, from a cluster perspective, ensure that we factor them into when we deal with our strategies and policies on the ground. In terms of the facilities for consultations, at the court level, we're also looking at how do we increase consultation rooms, etc., in terms of that. In all our new courts, we have those sort of facilities, etc., but it is something that we will be dictated to by our budget and the capacity constraints in some of our buildings. Some of them are very old buildings with very little space. and we need to find alternatives on how to deal with some of those. Okay, I think in view of the time, if there are anything specific that you need further from our side, we are any time willing to assist further. And when you deal, when you call the other role players, etc., and if you require any attention from the faster side, we're also obviously willing to assist in that regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So just the one thing, Mampaliso asked for the breakdown of the 2,606. You don't have to give it to us now, but we'd want it by gender, by location, and a list charge. Just write that down for us. If it's going to be done by details, it doesn't matter, but we'd like it in writing. These are the numbers of women, the numbers of men, and these are the type of cuts. So that we at least are okay with that. Then it's fine. Can we then ask for DCS to respond to whatever we might have asked initially, and wrap it up at that point?
Thank you, Chair. First of all, the 2,606, we're happy to give that report to the portfolio committee. If I can indicate, our almost 2,000 of those 2,606 are in 10 of our remand detention facilities. So we do have those figures available, but we'll give it in terms of the breakdown that the Chair has requested. There was a question on whether we know about mentally ill and severely incapacitated within our centres. The one issue that mentally ill and severely incapacitated, I think we must just split. The mentally ill, there's, as I've indicated, two issues. The one is the people that we have in our centres awaiting trial. So not state patients, but awaiting trial persons. And these are the people that we keep in our centres until they can be observed either within the centre or within a hospital. Now there we are dealing with the Department of Health, obviously, on that aspect. But the last indication we've had from the Department of Health is that the observation beds in total that they have available for this kind of thing is 170 nationwide. So we do face challenges in terms of keeping people awaiting those beds. But I think also in terms of if we're looking at numbers, what I indicated previously is that we work from the J7. If it's not indicated on the J7, we can't give accurate figures on the people we are holding for observation, pending observation in the hospital, but we're addressing that in terms of the amended J7. The issue of the uniforms disappearing when they get to court, we've looked at that. And quite frankly, the people that receive court clothes from DDS will be people that have a real need. We're not giving it to everybody. We're giving it to people arriving in our centres in the middle of winter with no shoes or no jacket. So, yes, we will not ask for them back when they arrive at court and they are dismissed. There are some that we must assume will disappear. Then the last issue is the challenges indicated in terms of Section 5.2b. The challenge that we face is a challenge that we face generally with this Act. It's a new Act. We're looking at previously what we did and what we are doing now. So we previously, in some regions, we've had agreements between SAPS and DDS about where people are being kept. Those cannot continue. So now we need to move people from within SAPS cells to detention facilities. And they are going to be further away and sometimes overcrowded. So the challenge that we're dealing with there is to say, sometimes we now need to move people that are sitting within a SAPS cell further away than we would ordinarily have them. And then we need to discuss with SAPS how we're going to deal with transport. I think the issue of transport was raised earlier as well in terms of security issues. But these are exactly the kind of challenges that we are discussing on a national level that then will be jointly cascaded down to all of the regions and centres and police cells so that we have a common understanding of how we can deal with them. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, ma'am. At some point, I don't know, Cindy will advise us if it's possible. You know, I think we need a discussion around this thing called remand detention, specialized remand detention facilities. I talk for myself. I don't understand it. Are we saying that if you take away deep group prison, not subsidy, take deep group prison, and you say that the remand detention center in deep group prison, what are you saying? Are you saying that wing? I'm not saying you must discuss it, but I'm saying these are the type of things. Is it just that wing that is going to be remand detention within the broad facility? You guys spoke about special management for remand detention. Does it mean somebody's going to be exclusively remand? We just need to have an understanding of what all this thing means. At some point, there needs to be 10 specialized remand detention centers. Is it certain, or is there one per? I think at some point you must come and do a presentation. Exactly what does it mean in terms of HR, what does it mean in terms of infrastructure, and what does it mean in terms of location? If it's within a current existing facility, Are you then going to ring-fence DGMB so that it's only remand and everybody else? I think we need that type of a discussion at some point. Thank you very much. Thanks to the members. We meet with the department next week to deal with your side of the business, quarterly from your side of the business. We will be in touch with Legal Aid Board. I think Mr. Max has said that we might invite you guys. If not only us, we will talk to our colleagues in the portfolio committee so that we can piggyback on them, so that we can have a discussion and share with you the implications of SEPs on overcrowding, the implications of Legal Aid Board on overcrowding. And similarly, Mr. Durant, we will call you and the NTA, it needs to be, on overcrowding. And a tough point before I left, Ilovo on Thursday, somebody was suggesting that we have an Indaba, very much like we have here now, but that we just have an Indaba with the broader public, so that they understand the challenges and what is Legal Aid doing, the challenges and what is SEPs doing, the challenges of what NTA is doing, justice and correctional services, because the universities are running wild at this thing of remand detention, medical parole, and so on. So if you guys have got a few cents that you, I know you guys, at the end of the year when you want to fiscal dump, instead of going overseas or buying lunch, bring it this way to have a workshop. We don't have money in the committee, but I do think we need an endeavor on the Correctional Matters Amendment Act. I really do think. Yourself and civil society, and we champion it if need be. Members, thank you very much. Mr. Abram, you know that you're in action this afternoon, and I'm going to talk to you about it. Okay. Please wait for me for 2 minutes. Thank you very much for meeting with us.